All right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on a Sunday night into Monday morning. And here till 4. 312-981-7200 is the number if you want to join us. We're here till 4 o'clock. It is a Monday morning, so we're going to do a we'll talk with Steve and Eric. A couple of new movies opened up, well, virally or virtually. there are some news stories about the movie-going experience out there. AMC says they're going to open up their theaters in July. But then their consumers are now 70% of consumers are saying that they would rather watch movies at home rather than going out and risking what's your health and safety. So there's some interesting stuff to talk about in that regard. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in here. We're going to talk about urban legends, some really ridiculous and classic urban legends that we will get to. But there's a current urban legend about Idaho's parachuting beavers. I'm not quite sure what to make of that. But we'll talk a little bit about that. Walter Jacobson has a perspective, and we'll hear him coming up in just a little bit, as we do every Sunday night into Monday morning. We always play back some classic Johnny Carson stuff. You can watch the Johnny Carson show right here on Antenna TV every night, and I highly recommend that you do that because it's just hilarious and nostalgic and wonderful. And we always play back some comedy from the classic Carson, whether it be sketches or stand-up or interviews, things like that. Well, Robert Klein, who is one of the greatest stand-up comedians of all time, who killed on Carson every time he was on. Robert Klein, we'll hear some stand-up from Robert Klein. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we're here live. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. So, the lakefront is closed. Am I right, Tom?
Yeah, the lakefront, for all intents and purposes, is closed.
I don't think people know that, though. I don't think people realize that. Here's a quick story here. Confusion is rampant among people in Chicago flocking to the lakefront trail, as some places have reopened in phase 3 of the city's pandemic reopening plan. The popular area remains shut down. But someone reported dozens of people are thus being turned away. A constant stream of bikers, runners, and walkers are being rerouted to the west side of Lakeshore Drive, as Chicago Park District security waved at people who were on the wrong side of the drive. Many were surprised that they were violating the rules. Some traveled for a while before they hit the roadblock. Franklin Euro says, I got near Belmont, rode up towards Wrigleyville, went back to the beach for a while, now I'm riding back. Police are also positioned along the East Trail that is closed, all 18 miles of it. For the past few weeks, everybody is unsure if the lakefront is open, so I think they just need to have it posted somewhere. There's been spotty enforcement. In some cases, people ride right past the officers. Mayor Lori Lightfoot instructed police to stand guard in March. Her goal was to stop crowds from potentially spreading the COVID-19 onto the lakefront. We certainly believe the trail can be used safely, said Greg Hipp, who is executive director of Chicago Area Runners Association. The group, known for short as CARA, C-A-R-A, thinks it is time to open for exercise. It proposed a lakefront plan earlier this month to the mayor's office. Hipp said that the trail is essentially for runners' safety. CARA's been hearing from both the running community as well as general members of the community for quite some time about congested sidewalks and inability to social distance. He said the lakefront provides more room, and limited hours could be a solution. That plan's already in place on Chicago's Riverwalk. The mayor's office opened the approximately 1.5-mile stretch because it's easier to manage and enforce rules upon. Getting people to follow stricter rules in other places has proven problematic, with some saying they should be posted, that they should be posted somewhere. We asked Chicago police about their enforcement and if any citations were being given out. Chicago police responded with a blanket statement saying the stay-at-home order is still in effect for the lakefront, and it's in the interest of the health and safety of Chicago residents. But people don't seem to be following the rule here. Did you, Tom, did you go to the lakefront a lot?
I did, yeah. I live right by the lakefront.
Yeah.
And that's what confused me about some of this, is that when I drive to work, I'm never trying to go to the lakefront, but I just hop right on Lakeshore Drive. I can see police officers right there at the entrance to Montrose Beach.
Right.
Right there, posted right there. It's rare that I see people trying to go past them, but they're there. And sometimes I've noticed in parks that are supposed to be closed, there's people just hanging out. Just hanging out.
Yeah.
And granted, they're very far away from one another, usually just a couple of people maybe sitting on a bench, and then another group somewhere far away. But there's these giant signs that say, park closed
right.
until further notice. And I don't really get it.
I understand that people want to get outside. I understand that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We've been in quarantine. People are kind of losing their minds. I'm not one of them. I spend most of my days in isolation anyway. But I can understand people wanting to get out there, but you got to follow the rules, man.
I will say I do get some of the confusion, especially with everything that had gone over the last couple of weeks here, even driving, getting onto Lakeshore Drive. There were some days I had no idea how I was going to go to work and just had to figure it, just plan my route as it was happening. You know, I wasn't sure if Lakeshore was going to be closed for a protest or just to keep people off or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd have to take a different route. And then all of a sudden, you know, maybe on the way home I could take Lakeshore, but I couldn't get on at this place, but I could get in on that place.
Right.
You know, so I will say that I don't blame people who are a little confused, because if they, you know, if you were on your bike and you saw other people biking or people walking,
yeah,
you might say, oh, I guess we're kind of back in business.
Yeah.
So
it is confusing. No, I understand. It is confusing. It is. But it's closed. The lakefront's closed. So we should abide by those rules. So, all right, let's take a quick break here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Flag Day. So we're going to talk about the history of this holiday and talk about some of these other things. And also, there's an article here about the ugliest flags on the planet. I'll do my best to describe some of those. But it is Flag Day here on 720 WGN. We'll talk a little bit about that. All right. Hey, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. Hey, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday. It'll be Monday and it'll be a jokey time. I believe my dad is, after this joke today, I think he's two jokes away from 300.
That'll be it, yeah.
Jeez.
300.
You know, and he still has an endless supply.
No repeats.
No repeats. So yeah, he's a couple away. I think after today, he's two away from 300.
Should we get him like a jersey or something, Mr. 300?
Yeah.
Big cake.
It's amazing. And again, like I said, he will not run out. He can tell 300 jokes at the drop of a hat. So, yeah. So that's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to talk with Steve and Eric. Got a couple of movies to review, and we got some other interesting news stories. 70% of consumers would rather watch movies at home now because I guess they're getting used to it rather than going outside and maybe not being safe. But AMC plans to open theaters in July. So, and then Gone with the Wind is going to be put back on HBO Max, but with an introduction instead, because they pulled Gone with the Wind from HBO Max. So we'll talk a little bit about that, too. And, of course, Urban Legends. There's some fantastic Urban Legends. So sometimes you got to go, wait a minute, is that true? Or is that just a lie? So, it is Flag Day. And it commemorates the adoption of the flag of the United States of America. So on June 14th, 1777, the Second Continental Congress passed a resolution approving the design of a national flag. Resolved that the flag of the 13 United States shall be 13 stripes, alternate red and white, that the Union be 13 stars, white on a blue field, representing the new constellation. That's the resolution said. According to legend, President George Washington commissioned Philadelphia seamstress Betsy Ross to create a flag for the new nation. However, the Library of Congress reports that scholars actually credit the flag's design to Francis Hopkinson, who also designed the Great Seal and the first coin of the United States. Scholars also say that it is highly likely that Ross met Washington and did sew the early American flags in her family's Philadelphia upholstery shop. There have been 27 official versions of the U.S. flag, each having varying arrangements of the stars, until 1912 when President Taft standardized the then new flag's 48 stars into six rows of eight. A 49th and 50th star have since been added to the American flag to represent all the states in the Union. The current version of the flag dates back to July 4th, 1960. And the country began celebrating Flag Day in 1916. That's when President Woodrow Wilson issued a presidential proclamation establishing National Flag Day, June 14th. So, there you go. You got a flag at home?
Not yet. Because I feel like it should be, if I'm going to have one, it should be flown outside.
Yeah.
And there's, I live in a condo complex. There's not really anywhere to properly display it. You know, like on a proper flag pole or something like that. But I would like to, once I have a proper homestead and can display the flag, I'd like to.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a good idea.
But I live in a big apartment building too, so it's, you know.
Not a whole lot of flags.
I mean, you can have it. You know, people have flags outside, you know, like outside their window.
That's true. That's true.
You know, you can mount it on the windowsill outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people do that. But yeah, Flag Day.
You know, my dad always was convinced there were 51 states.
Why? By the way, your dad was British.
Yes.
So
he was British. But he lived in the United States starting in the 80s. All the way for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. Never became a citizen, though. Never became a citizen. But he did. He lived here, permanent resident, all that kind of stuff. Insisted that there should be 51 stars on the flag.
Why?
Because for some God-unknown reason, the hill he wanted to die on was that Puerto Rico should be considered a state.
Oh, okay.
And in fact, when he first got sick, he had to have brain surgery. And afterwards, you know, they ask you a few questions, make sure everything's, you know, still ticking up there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what's your name? It's Ken. You know, where do you live? Do you know what year it is? Do you know what month it is? That sort of thing. Do you know roughly?
This is after he had surgery.
Yeah, after he had surgery. Make sure that the brain was all good.
Yeah.
And I guess one of the questions they ask is, how many stars are on the American flag? Which, for anybody living in the United States of America, is a decently easy question to answer. To make sure that your brain's still going correctly. The gerbil on the treadmill is still rolling along. And he says to the nurse, oh, there's 51 stars. She looks at him. She said, excuse me? How many stars are on the American flag? And he's like, you're 51 stars. And she's like, all right, well, I'll be right back. I'm just going to go chat with your wife for a second. Goes over to my mom. She says, yeah, he got most of the questions right, but he is insisting that there are 51 stars on the American flag. And she said, oh, no, that's, you know, he's thought that for years. He thinks Puerto Rico's a state. He's convinced that Puerto Rico is a state and should have a star on the American flag. So in reality, him getting it wrong proved that he was all good.
Yeah.
Up in the head.
What's funny is that they could have went, uh-oh. Let's up the medication.
Yeah, we're going to have to Somebody get back in there, rewire this guy.
Yeah.
And mom was like, nope, no, no,
it's
no,
it's a good
no.
thing that didn't happen.
No, very good that they checked in first and said, what's the deal with the 51 stars?
Yeah. That's pretty
there
funny.
It is. Yeah. That's my biggest connection to the flag is that all growing up, my dad would always tell me, he's like, God, there should be 51 stars. Puerto Rico should be a state. I was like, Dad, it's like a protectorate or whatever. It's not really, it's not considered a state. It's its own little category, you know, like American Samoa.
Yeah.
That's not on the flag. So.
Well, your dad had a lot of unique points of view.
That's putting it mildly. But yes, he did. He did. He thought a lot of things should be different.
Yeah. And he let people know about it.
Oh, yeah. And it was fun because he would always complain about this, you know, this mayor, this politician. We said, well, Dad, become a citizen so you can vote.
Right.
He said, no way am I ever going to become a citizen.
Why was he so against being a citizen?
He didn't want to give up his British citizenship.
Oh, I see.
Because when you'd have to switch, you know, like you generally, I don't know where dual citizenship is at this point.
Right.
But you're generally supposed to have one or the other, not both, not two.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, no, I want to keep my British passport. Really proud of it. Really, really proud of it.
Wow. All right.
That was the hill he wanted to die on about. It's like, all right, man.
51 stars. Oh, man. All right. So we got some American flag facts here. Because it is Flag Day. The modern American flag was prompted by a payment of 3 strings of wampum. By 1777, the U.S. was in the midst of the Revolutionary War and still waffling on the exact look of its flag. This was a cause for concern for Thomas Greene, a Native American, who wanted to bring an official flag to his nation for protection when they visited Philadelphia. Greene asked for help from the government, throwing in a payment of 3 strings of wampum, beads made from shells, to sweeten the deal. Within 2 weeks, a resolution was passed, finalizing the flag as a creation with 13 stars and 13 stripes, the date June 14th, 1777. All right, how about that? A little wampum. How about this? Betsy Ross might not be as tied to the American flag as we thought. She may have sewn quite a few in her day, but there is no actual evidence that Betsy Ross was the person responsible for the design of the American flag. In fact, Ross's name didn't even come up in conjunction with the deed until the 1870s, more than 30 years after her death. The first person to have publicly claimed design credit was New Jersey's Francis Hopkinson in 1780, who hoped in vain to earn a quarter cask of the public wine for his efforts. Is it just some booze?
I didn't realize that there were public wines.
Just getting paid off in wine?
Is there a jar in the middle of town?
That's weird.
Here, you get a quarter cask.
This seems weird to me. All right. We have more of flag facts, American flag facts. It's Flag Day. And we also have some of the ugliest flags on the planet that we're going to talk about. If you want to jump in at any time, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. I'd like to know. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. Eric Childress and Steve Procopi are going to join me. We've got some news items to talk about in terms of the world of movies. We've got a couple of movies to review as well. 312-981-7200. Some big ones, actually. A couple of really big films debuted. And this is the new norm, man, in your house. These are movies that were supposed to be released in movie theaters. Obviously, that's not happening. So it's a different world as far as that is that goes, and we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. We're going to talk about some urban legends because there's a lot of great ones out there, and my dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It is Flag Day, so we're giving you some facts about the American flag. Like, for instance, the American flag hasn't always had 13 stripes. A few years after welcoming Vermont and Kentucky, states 14 and 15, into the Union, That would be 1791 and 1792, respectively. The new version of the flag was created that had 15 stars and 15 stripes. As the U.S. continued to add new stripes, there was a concern about having to continually add additional stripes. The solution, revert to 13 to represent the original 13 colonies and let the stars do the heavy lifting. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, let's see. Here's Frank on WGN. Hi, Frank.
Hey, hey, how are you?
All right, what's up?
Being the 14th, that's Flag Day. If I'm not mistaken, I think that the Star Spangled Banner, I used to see this on calendars that you get every year, was the 14th of September, or correct me if I'm wrong.
I do not know that.
And one up. Pardon me, sir?
I said I don't know that. I don't know the fact there.
Oh, maybe they have something about it in the studio and they punch it up real quick, you know. But anyway, speaking of the legends, urban legends, that song, gosh, I haven't heard that in years. The one that before your show began, he closed out with Curtis Mayfield's. Part of the lyrics, I don't know, maybe that's the title. People get ready, there's a train a coming from 1963.
Yeah.
The dynamite tune, man.
It's a great song. It's a legendary song. All right, Frank, thanks. 312-981-7200 here on WGN. Here's Nick on WGN. Hey, Nick.
Hey, how you doing,
all
man?
Right.
Nice. Should be got it. So pleasant to listen to. You don't know how nice it is. But I was telling your screener that I think that just like in 1959, that was in that year, people in the government knew that the Cold War was building up, and they made Alaska and Hawaii states because then they could place military facilities there openly and with no problem. So I think now we might go into also, besides Puerto Rico, but more into the South Asia area and like Guam, and maybe then they're thinking of doing that. So instead of like making one area state like Puerto Rico or even Guam, but not Puerto Rico, instead of maybe make two or three. That's what I think, you know, because that's politically, it looks like we're building up towards another confrontation with the communists.
Well, we'll see, Nick. But
okay.
Interesting piece of history there, buddy. Thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. Here's another fact about the flag. Some of the American flag's star fields have been pretty strange looking. As of 1818, conventions concerning the numbers of stars and stripes were cemented and remain in place today. However, one thing remained uncodified, star layout. With this lack of official guidelines, some designers got creative. There was the 26-star star flag, which configured stars of varying sizes into a star-shaped layout. The 33-star Fort Sumter flag, which had stars arranged in a layout that looked kind of like one of the aliens from Space Invaders. The 38-star creation, which had stars of concentric circles and others. So they've had about very the stars and the have been laid out pretty strangely over the years. How about this? The Dakotas threw off the star design plans for the American flag. There have been 27 official versions of the U.S. flag, each with them different numbers of stars. A 39-star version is not among them, but that didn't stop at least one enterprising flag manufacturer from producing some of the for the marketplace. The reason for the miscalculation, some thought that North Dakota and South Dakota were going to be admitted as one state, and there wasn't even a 40-star version. The Flag Act of 1818 specifies that the star edition shall take effect on the fourth day of July, and then Montana, Washington, and Idaho were also admitted before July 4th, so they skipped from a 38 to a 43-star flag. Jeez. All right, here's Rick on WGN. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, what's up?
Well, in 1959, I was in the military. I was in the Navy band, or the fleet band for in the Navy, and we were stationed up in Kodiak, Alaska. And they were having statehood ceremonies in Sitka on Castle Hill. And they asked our band, we went over there to play for the ceremonies. So we were over there in Sitka, and they were, after the ceremonies, they were running the flag up with the new 49-star flag up the flagpole for maybe 5 seconds or so, and then bringing it down, putting another one up, and they were selling the flags for $25.
Oh, wow.
So I bought one. It's a 3x5 and 49-star flag, and I've been flying that flag ever since. It's kind of faded, that, but I've been doing that. But it made my neighbor... When I got out of the military, I moved back to Chicago, and I used to fly that flag all the time, or I still do. And my neighbor at that time was from Nebraska, and he just got livid that this flag, you know, had 49. So he said, by this time, because it was only 6 months, and then Hawaii came in,
right.
He said, there are 50 star flags in front. I told him, I said, look, I don't recognize Nebraska. So I still have it. I still, it's pretty bad shape, but I still have it.
What was his reaction when you said that?
Oh, he just looked at me because he knows I have a strange sense of humor, and you know, it's just better just not to even talk to me a lot.
Yeah. So you still have that flag, huh?
Yes, I do, sir.
That's amazing. That's a great story too.
And it flew up on that pole the very first day we were a state, when it was up that pole. So for me, it's special.
Oh, that's great, man. That's a great story, Rick. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Take care. Bye. Isn't that great? I don't recognize Nebraska.
I think there's a similar... I've heard a similar joke kind of like that about Missouri from Futurama.
It's from Futurama?
Yeah, it's just the day I recognize Missouri as a state is the day that I die.
Is that a Bender line?
I think it's actually Professor Farnsworth.
Oh, it is. It's a Farnsworth line. Okay.
Yeah, something odd like that.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was a reference.
But I love that. Oh, I don't recognize Nebraska.
That's so funny.
Now, don't get me wrong. I love them. They're the Cornhuskers, right? The Cornhuskers.
I believe so, yeah.
Nebraska.
Yeah.
A lot of friends went to Nebraska. Great state. Great state.
Yeah.
But,
classic Springsteen album too.
Yeah, I wish I could see a flag with, you know, it's so cool that he still has the flag with 49 stars on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's never going to really be in production again, because what purpose would serve? So it's a nice little pocket of history.
There might be something you can, you know, I think you can pick up old flags, right?
I know you can definitely get like the colonial, the 13 stars.
Sure.
I know you can still get that, but I wonder, can you get like a 37-star flag or a 38, you know, some of one of the odd numbers.
Yeah.
I'd be curious.
I bet they're out there. You know what I mean? I mean, there's people collect everything.
I wonder if there are any, you know what the study of flags is, or the interest in flags is called, right?
No.
Vexology or vexillology, something like that.
Where does that name come from?
I don't know where it comes from, but vexillology.
Vexillology?
Vexillology. Vexillology. It's the study of flags. A person who studies flags is a vexillologist. One who designs flags is a vexillographer. And someone who is a great admirer of flags is a vexophile.
Where does this vex thing come from?
The Latin word vexillum, which means flag.
Oh, okay.
Logia, which is
Robert
study.
Logia.
Robert Logia.
Right.
So, logiology, is that the study of Robert Logia?
That's the study of Robert. I don't know. Robert Logia? You remember that commercial?
Yeah. Yeah, the kid in the orange juice.
The kid in the orange juice. It's one of the greatest commercials of all time. The first time I saw it, I fell off the couch laughing. Who could make you drink your orange juice? I don't know. Robert Logia? And then Robert Logia comes in. It's like, where? How? What?
But surely there are a few vexophiles?
Vexophiles.
Yeah, vexophiles out there who collect flags of some type.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, no. I have no doubt in my mind that there are people out there who probably have a great collection of flags. Wouldn't be surprised by that at all. 312-981-7200 if you're a vexillologist.
You're a vexophile.
Vexophile. 312-981-7200. More facts about the American flag on Flag Day. We're going to break here because we got Walter's perspective. Good old Walter Jacobson. And his perspective is brought to us every week, and it's sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. Here's Walter.
That dear little ditty about 30 days has September, April, June, and November. Coming this November is our presidential election. Will the winner be Donald Trump or Joe Biden, with or without the interference of Vladimir Putin, who the federal government says is interfering already? To stop him, the politicians in Congress are promising and proposing legislation requiring election officials to expose Putin's interference and to put limits on political spending of any foreign agent, and legislation requiring the Trump and Biden campaigns to reveal their contacts with Russians, especially Russians. Federal intelligence is reporting that Putin is using the media to interfere, while the Congress is debating on how to do that and about whether to require the presidential campaigns to alert the FBI to foreign offers of assistance, and about whether to require the states to upgrade their election systems to detect foreign interference. That proposal is being stalled by Democrats and Republicans arguing about how much to pay for upgrades. Despite the urgency to prevent Russian interference, all proposals in Congress are being stalled by debates. That's American interference. There are just 5 months to go until we vote for president, and election security is just talk. Can you imagine anything dumber than that? I can't. I'm Walter Jacobson, and that's my perspective. For more, visit WTNRadio.com or download the WTN Radio app.
Right. Hello, Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock on a what will be a Monday morning. We're going to talk to the guys here, Eric and Steve, a couple of movies to talk about and some movie news in terms of AMC might be reopening their theaters, they're saying. But most people now prefer watching their movies at home. So we'll see if the movie business can survive. It's going to be interesting to see what happens as the year goes on. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a Monday morning. It will be a Monday morning. It'll be a jokey time. We are going to talk about urban legends, too. There are so many good ones. Tom, you all right?
Yeah, sorry. Just the news peg for that one was a good one. I was happy to find it.
Oh.
Yeah, the parachuting beavers.
Oh, yeah, the parachuting beavers.
And
out of Idaho.
It's all true.
Uh-huh.
Dead serious.
There are parachuting beavers in Idaho.
There were. There were parachuting beavers in Idaho.
Uh-huh. What happened? Then their chute's not open? What?
You know, we'll have to find out.
Because you said there were.
Yeah.
A little cryptic. Now I'm picturing beavers not being able to open their chutes and feeling very bad for them. The world's weird. Really is. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. Hey, do you have, do you display your flags? Do people have collections of flags out there? 312-981-7200. I would imagine people just display their flags inside as well, right?
Yeah, some people, if they've got, you know, especially a nice big porch, you know, I love seeing, you know, someone with a porch and a flag out there, whether it's, you know, the U.S. flag, Chicago flag, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I get vexillology. I think it's really cool because there's so many strange flags out there, and there's so many stories behind why they are the way they are.
Yeah. Yeah, there's I got a story in front of me right here where they have the ugliest flags on the planet. By the way, there are some really ugly flags here that are listed in this article, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. It is Flag Day, and there are a few more interesting facts about the American flag. The 50-star pattern of the American flag was supposedly designed by a high school student. When Alaska became State 49, President Dwight Eisenhower received loads of ideas for a new flag, most of them featuring 49 stars, along with suggestions like a dove of peace, eagles, and maps. But as with suggestions like a dove of peace, or as the story goes, a year before, Robert Heft, a 17-year-old student, at Lancaster High in Ohio was thinking ahead and guessed Hawaii would be admitted soon after Alaska. For a class project, Heft decided to create a 50-star flag and got a B-. Meanwhile, a friend who had taped 5 leaves on a notebook got an A. What? When Heft complained, the teacher responded that if Heft could get the flag accepted by Washington, he'd change the grade. So Heft sent the flag to his congressman, saying that a 50-star flag was ever needed. This is the potential option. Eventually, Alaska and Hawaii joined the United States. The congressman remembered he had had a flag in reserve, and America got a new flag. Heft later recalled that a month after he graduated, a teacher changed his grade to an A. That is a pretty fantastic story. That is a pretty fantastic story. All right. Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, Nick, yeah. I'm retired U.S. Navy, and before I retired, we had 2 flags sent, one to Wrigley Field and one to Great Lakes, and they both flew them up there, and the one from Wrigley Field is in my shadow box when I retired.
Oh, look at that.
Yep.
That's really something. That's really something.
Yep.
That's great. Mike, thanks for your service, too.
Yep, 20 years. I retired. I was in 83 to 2003, so.
God bless you, man. Thanks for your service, Mike. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks. Okay, talk to you later, Nick.
All right, take care. That's a great story. Yeah. Flew over at Wrigley.
That's a nice flag.
That's fantastic. That's great. I like it. Trucker Rich. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Nick. How you doing tonight?
All right. What's up?
Well, when I was in the Army, every time we went like to a temporary duty, like in Honduras and Guatemala and Egypt, I used to carry an American flag with me. But the first time I got in trouble for flying it outside of our tent, because you're not allowed to do that. You can't fly an American flag on somebody else's soil, their base, unless it's a permanent U.S. installation. But you know how they never dip the American flag for another country's flag?
No.
Oh, yeah. The American flag is never dipped, like, if you watch it at the Olympic ceremonies where other nations go by, they lower their flag as they're marching. But the American flag, they don't do that due to the flag laws. And there's only one flag that can fly above the American flag legally. And that's the chaplain's flag on a Navy ship at sea while he's holding services.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
That was part of, like, the U.S. flag laws we had to study at one time, and just little idiosyncrasies about it.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, you know, it's so interesting, Rich, that I know that there's a lot of rules that are applied to the world of the flags. There's so many different details that every time, you know,
right,
I either read about it or talk about it, I'm always fascinated by how much there is to it, you know?
Right. There was a bizarre article in Stars and Stripes, a military magazine.
Yeah, yeah.
About the Confederate flag.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of service members flew it, like in Vietnam, because they were not allowed to fly the U.S. flag.
Oh, I see.
On their equipment or at their fire bases and stuff like that. So that's why some of the military people kind of like that flag, but personally, I don't. Yeah. I mean, I know it's in history, and we should let it go because it's got a lot of bad connotations behind it, but that's why people still kind of fight and want it, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't agree with it for what it, you know.
All right, Rich.
Anyway.
Thanks, buddy.
Yep.
All right, take care.
Have a good one.
You too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And it is Flag Day, and we've given you some facts about the American flag. The 50-star flag is the first American flag to have lasted 50 years. In contrast, over a 50-year period, starting in the early 1800s, the flag went through 17 different versions. The actual American flag that inspired the Star-Spangled Banner still exists. The flag that flew at Fort McHenry during the War of 1812, immortalized by Francis Scott Key's poem-turned-anthem, is one of the few remaining specimens of a 15-star, 15-bar flag. What's left of it is on permanent display at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. Wow, all right. See, here's Roseanne on WGN. Hi, Roseanne.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
So my husband is has been collecting flags. He hasn't really collected anything new lately, but he's 58, and he's had these since he was like a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling Tom that he's got a bunch of United States ones, but they're kind of like, I don't know if they're collector or what they are exactly, but one's like a 76, like Stars with the 76 in the middle.
Okay. Oh, yeah, sure. Then, yeah. I know that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if that was something they did for the Bicentennial or something.
I think it was. I'm almost positive it was. It was something to do with the Bicentennial.
Okay. And then he's got one with just the stars, the 13 stars,
mm-hmm.
in a circle. He's got an Illinois flag. He has what we think, I think, is a Guam flag.
Okay.
Because his brother was in the Navy.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple other variations.
Does he display these at all, or?
Yeah. Well, we have a porch, and from time to time we'll pull them out.
Yeah.
You know, and display them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. That's a nice thing to collect. That's very, very cool stuff.
Yeah, I think he got started just because he was, I don't know how he exactly got started, but there's like a, growing up he had down the block from where he lived, it was like a for boating or something.
Uh-huh.
And I think that guy had like a bunch, and I don't know if he got them from this guy or how he got them. Yeah, it was kind of cool.
Very cool. All right, Roseanne, thank you so much.
Sure, thanks.
Okay. All right.
Bye.
There you go, Flag Day. Thought we would give you some facts. Didn't realize there's so many people out there with flag collections, I guess. That's pretty cool. Very cool. Okay. We're going to take a break here. We got the news coming up. And then after the news, Steve Procopi and Eric Childress are going to join us. We've got some news stories that are movie related to talk about and a couple of new movies to review, which we will do right here on 720 WGN. All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're going to talk about urban legends, too. And we've got some classic Carson every weekday morning at 2:30. We like to go back in time to the Johnny Carson show, which you can watch on Antenna TV every night, and play back some classic bits or sketches or stand-up, and we'll be listening to the great Robert Klein, and that'll happen at 2:30. And there it is. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A couple of big movies premiered in homes, because that's the new thing now. People aren't going to the movies, and we also have some news stories to talk about in terms of that. AMC plans to reopen its theaters in July. Eric Childress and Steve Procopi join me. Eric, welcome.
Hello.
And
thank you.
Steve, welcome.
Hey there.
All right. How you guys holding up? Eric, how you holding up?
In that sort of that gray area now where like it seemed like we were, you know, starting to kind of turn a corner a little bit. Now it seems like that's kind of being yanked back away from us for a little while, and the loss of a summer is not boding well.
Yeah.
For me, so that's really kind of disappointing. You know, think that we're gonna have to, you know, who knows how, you know, where this is gonna go from here, but I was hoping that, you know, the summer is gonna be preserved a little bit.
Yeah, it's disappointing, but we got to do what we got to do, man.
Oh, totally.
So, Steve, how about you, man?
I'm good. Like I'm one of those nerds that's actually like tracking all the medical metrics in the state and in the city, and like every day I'm like looking at the updates, and I'm like, as much as the rest of the country might be going to hell in terms of cases going up again, we're doing really well, and we're still going down, and we're still like, and of course I'm watching it because I want to know when movie theaters are going to open up again and in the state and in the city. And those are, we can talk about that later, but yeah, like, and I'm just like, I, every day I'm like, wow, I can't believe that our numbers are getting better. And, so as much as I am still kind of nervous walking around and driving around, it's, I am a little bit encouraged by what I'm seeing, at least locally. So,
okay. All right. Well, we got to find a silver lining in any of this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's basically what it comes down to. Well, look, the movies are now premiering in people's houses, and two really big ones premiered this week. Two really big movies. Judd Apatow's latest with Pete Davidson called The King of Staten Island. Eric, tell us a little bit about this one.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, this is Judd Apatow's latest film, and I guess Pete Davidson from Saturday Night Live kind of, you know, talked to him, approached him about doing the story, and it's, you know, kind of, you know, semi-autobiographical story about Pete Davidson's life growing up in Staten Island. In the film, he plays a guy in his mid-20s, I think he's 24, still lives at home with his mom, played by Marissa Tomei. His younger sister is about to go off to college, so the two of them are going to be alone together. He hangs out with a bunch of his slacker pals. He is kind of hopeful he wants to someday be a tattoo artist. The things, you know, take a little bit of a turn when his mother meets, it's sort of his fault, a firefighter played by Bill Burr. The reason why this is such a big deal is that the story, we'll get into a little bit of Pete Davidson's past, but his father was killed, was a fireman himself, and was killed on duty many years ago when he was a kid. And it's something that's still manifests in different ways and still kind of traumatizes him a bit. Maybe leading to exactly where, you know, he is today and why he's, you know, he acts the way he does. But doesn't take too kindly to his mother dating this guy that was kind of a jerk to him when they first met. And he begins to start to try to break them up while, you know, continuing all these other storylines, including one involving a friend of his played by Belle Powley, who he has been sleeping with, but secretly he doesn't really want to let anyone know about it. And he's kind of dating her or sleeping with her on the side. And, you know, that's sort of the general story that we get about Davis's life here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Judd Apatow, you know, his films over the years, I have probably been a bit more of a Judd Apatow apologist more than anyone, especially with his directorial efforts, because the thing that I've always responded to in Apatow's films is just how funny they have been. 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up were on my top 10 list those years, and throughout the years, I just, even if his films have kind of failed to live up to the sort of the dramatic urgencies that some of them have aspired to, I was particularly fond of Funny People at the time, even though many people complained about its length, and that's something that Apatow has struggled with, at least critically. No one's really told him to keep his movies under 2 hours, and this one is no exception, coming in about 2 hours and 17 minutes. But because of the laugh factor, I have always been very forgiving of his movies, because I've always found good sense of enjoyment due to the comedic natures. And this one is certainly one that leans a little bit more into the dramatic side of things than his films of the past, with the exception of maybe Funny People. And I think this is one of the areas, the main area where I end up on the mixed side of this film, because I think that it's really, I was really struck early in the film when people who know Pete Davidson's backstory, that his father was a fireman who was killed during 9/11. And in the film, they take that element out of it, and they just say that he was killed in a hotel fire, which I thought was a really odd way of masking a real sense of sort of the true trauma in you know, what has manifested possibly in Pete Davidson's life. I think taking that one element away from it is, you know, a bit of a sidestep, kind of a bit of a just kind of a glossing over of that. And I thought that was sort of an odd thing to do, because then it just becomes, you know, I mean, anyone losing their parent in a situation like that is obviously going to manifest itself in different ways, and it's not to be taken lightly. But the 9/11 factor is just such a much more giant cloud that I was really kind of stunned that they took that part out of it. And the dramatic stuff throughout the movie, I think, starts to wander. There's so many storylines going on in his life. I think there's stuff involving his friends, including a robbery that happens that I thought could have been excised from the film. I think Bill Burr is very good in this movie, but I think the screenplay, I think he gets to do more with the character as an actor than the script sort of fills in the central relationship between him and Pete Davidson.
Okay,
I think that there is...
Eric, hang on.
Okay.
Hang on.
Okay.
All right, we're going to hold on, and then Eric will wrap it up, and then we'll get Steve's thoughts on this. And we've got some news stories to talk about in the world of movies as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Skyline studio. We're here till 4 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. We're going to talk about some really crazy urban legends. Those are so much fun to talk about. And Eric Childress and Steve Procopi are here. Two really big movies made their debut in our homes over the weekend, and we wanted to talk about those. Eric is here and Steve is
here.
Hello. All right, Eric, wrap it up on The King of Staten Island.
Yeah, okay. So as I was saying, back to the central relationship between Burr and Davidson, I thought Apatow was sort of missed the many opportunities to sort of, you know, talk about the sort of the idolized version of Davidson's father that he's built up his mind versus this reality that is now, you know, he's confronted with. And the fact that it takes, it's like almost like 80 minutes before they get to Davidson hanging around the fire department where his father used to work. That's where Steve Buscemi's chief character gets involved. And that sequence, that whole section of the movie, I thought was where everything was sort of converging at its best. But it comes so late in the proceedings, and I thought that if Apatow found a way to get that a little closer to the end of the first act or the beginning of the second act, we would have a lot more to work with in that arena. No one's particularly, I think everyone in the movie is good. I think Davidson is good in the movie. Burr is good. Marissa Tomei continues to just be effortless when it comes to, you know, characters like this. And the movie is generally funny throughout most of its running time. And that was something that was able to sort of, again, with Apatow's movies, sort of keep me on the verge of liking it. I don't dislike the movie, but I'm sort of right on the scale of mix on it, but as a little bit aiming downwards.
Okay. All right, Steve?
Oh, I adore this movie. I adore it. And I don't think the fact that they didn't tell the Pete Davidson story word for word, minute by minute, it impacts in any way. The point of... It's an interesting thing about why they didn't choose to make the father die at 9/11. I mean, the thing that sort of pushes Scott or maybe holds him back through his whole life since his dad died is that he kind of worshipped his dad and never really understood why he would sacrifice himself for strangers instead of choosing a safer job and being there to watch his kids grow up. And if that had been a 9/11 hero, I think there are people in the audience that would actually resent him for feeling that way. So I think by having him die in a more ordinary fire makes sense to a certain degree. But also, that's only a part of this film, is him sort of getting over that hump. The more interesting thing is really there's a scene right near the beginning of the film where Scott is talking to the Belle Pauly character, who he's sleeping with, and she wants to date him. She wants to actually date him, and he's like, no, no, no. And he, at first we think, oh, he's just being like a jerky guy, but it turns out he says to her, I'm scared of myself. And it's that moment that we kind of knew, and I certainly knew, that this film was something different. And it's also about, it's more of a mental illness, like a type of PTSD that he suffered as a child. And he's afraid to get close to people, and he doesn't want to negatively impact these people that he's close with. And that's sort of the secret of this movie, is it's not trying to be as funny as other Judd Apatow films. And it works, I think, even better as a more dramatic thing. It's full of laughs. Don't get me wrong. Like, Bill Burr is tremendous here. I think he's really coming into his own. The casting in this film is incredible. Like, even Maude Apatow as the younger sister has really come into her own. Pamela Adlin is in this movie, which I don't even think I knew when I started to watch it. And she, as a Bill Burr's ex-wife, oh my God, is she funny in this movie. But, like, over the course of the film, like, Scott just sort of gets called out for some of his bad behavior by these people that are really close to him. And there's no real villains in this film. Buscemi's amazing as sort of a guiding force for him. And in a weird way, it's like Judd Apatow has taken this sort of man-child persona that he really helped shape in his earlier films to a certain degree, and wonders, like, okay, how did these guys get this way in the first place? So, like, is there, like, sometimes there's a reason people don't grow up and don't leave home, and it's not always because they don't feel like it. And when the film, the film is not a complete downer at all, but it does provide us with a lot of food for thought, like kind of warming our hearts at the same time. So I think this is a real kind of a step forward for Apatow.
I'm with you, Steve. I think this movie's great. I thought it was just great. I thought it was funny and moving. I thought Pete Davidson was terrific. I mean, the entire cast is great.
Yeah.
But I just feel really old that Marissa Tomei is playing all these mother roles now. But anyway, I thought there was a real honesty to it, obviously because of the story and how sort of autobiographical it is. But I thought the casting, like you said, I thought the casting was really terrific, and everybody around it was good. And I too, Steve, did not know that Pamela Adlon was in the movie. And it just makes me happy to see her in anything.
Yeah.
And she's great in this. So is everybody. Bill Burr, again, you mentioned Bill Burr is great. And this is a great role for Pete Davidson. For people who kind of maybe dismiss him as the silly young guy, the sort of stoner young guy on SNL, people are going to look at this in a completely different light, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it premiered in your house. So that's what's going to be happening now with movies. And so I highly recommend this movie. Okay. Steve, tell us about The Five Bloods.
Well, this is a good exercise in timing is everything. And then again, great filmmaking is great filmmaking no matter the surroundings. But in the case of director Spike Lee's latest, The Five Bloods, the film feels so of the moment in many ways. You could almost swear he made it yesterday. And it's a quality that it shares with even with Black Klansman, his last film. The film kind of opens with a quick recap of Black American history in the late 1960s, especially as it applies to the Vietnam War, but it also incorporates major events like moon landing and various speeches by notable Black leaders, many of whom were assassinated or otherwise silenced in this period. And it's a real just bucket of cold water to your face to kind of get you in the right mindset for what comes next. And there's so much footage of protests. It's kind of shocking as well. And again, it seems deliberate, but I'm pretty sure it was there weeks and weeks and months ago. The soundtrack of this, the first few minutes, by the way, we should mention is Marvin Gaye's Inner City Blues. And at a particular point, we hear this lyric where he says he's talking about trigger happy police. And again, I don't know if Spike Lee adjusted something in where that lands in the footage, but again, I don't think he changed anything. I think it's just incredible coincidence, but it really stands out. And actually, Marvin Gaye kind of serves as the large part of the soundtrack of the songs from his album, What's Going On. And there's a particular sequence where there's sort of a vocal-only performance of that title track in a couple key scenes, and it just feels like the characters are entering like this dream and they don't necessarily want to be having it. So basically this is about four black Vietnam veterans who return to Vietnam looking both for the remains of a fallen fifth member of their very tight-knit group, and they're also sort of secretly looking for some long buried by them crate of gold that they discovered during the war in a wreckage of a plane that was supposed to pay off their allies in country. And the squad leader, whose name is Stormin Norman, who's played by Chadwick Boseman, who we see in flashbacks, suggests they bury the gold and come back when things have cooled off, but it's taken like several decades for that to happen. So Lee favorite and supercharged Delroy Lindo plays Paul, who has turned fairly right wing over the years and even spends part of the film wearing a MAGA hat. He's clearly suffering from a great deal of mental trauma, refusing any kind of help. His son has sort of snuck on board this mission to look out for him, but also maybe to get a cut of the action. And he's played by Jonathan Majors, who was so good in The Last Black Man in San Francisco last year. Then the other old friends are played by another Lee regular, Clark Peters, then Norm Lewis, and also Isaiah Whitlock, who, like Clark Peters, is a veteran of The Wire. And he seems to be the only one without any real deep, painful issues going into
Steve,
this journey.
Steve,
yeah,
hang on.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Eric and Steve are here, and we'll tell you what we all thought of Defy Bloods, which is Spike Lee's latest movie. And we've got some interesting movie-related news to get to as well. And that's coming up right here on WGN.
All right.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We are also going to talk about some classic urban legends. And as part of the classic comedy that we always play from the Johnny Carson show, which you can watch every night on Antenna TV, we're going to play back some classic Robert Klein stand-up, one of the most legendary stand-up comedians of all time. Right now, Steve Procopi and Eric Childress are here, and two really big movies opened up in your house this past weekend, and we're talking about them. Here's Eric, and
hello.
Here's Steve.
Hello.
Okay, Steve, continue. Defy Bloods, which is Spike Lee's latest.
Yeah, and so essentially what Spike Lee does is send his characters on sort of their own Heart of Darkness voyage, a scenario that's sort of underscored by a big Apocalypse banner, Apocalypse Now banner that we see in the background of a scene, but with every step, each man is kind of pushed a little deeper into their own personal hell, and sometimes that's physical pain, but usually it's more of an emotional thing. One of the most amazing mind-bending choices that Spike Lee makes here is to use the older actors, the lead actors, in the flashback scenes with Chadwick Boseman that are supposed to be taking place during the war. He doesn't get younger actors to play these guys. He gets the old guys, and it's kind of incredible. It's a weird thing to see, but it really does work. But it also makes us wonder, okay, can we even trust these memories? Because Delroy Lindo's character says he sees Chadwick Boseman's ghost every night and has long conversations with him. So we're not sure if what we're seeing is really sort of an idealized version of the events from the past, or if they're more factual. We're never 100% sure, but it might be some combination of both. But it's clear that everybody idolized Norman at the time, and it's just simply like, yeah, it's kind of incredible. So, strangely enough, in the film's final few sequences, it begins to like show signs of becoming more of an action movie. Delroy Lindo, if you could bottle what it is he's doing in this movie, you would never fall asleep again. If you drank it, even that, like, Lee has done such impressive work getting us to care about these lost souls, and that the life or death stakes that are clearly happening during this adventure of theirs seem so much higher because of that. The commentary on history is not only rampant, but it seems strangely and disappointingly timeless. The criticisms of Nixon in this film fit pretty comfortably next to statements about our current president. And the film makes it crystal clear that the horrors of war aren't just about dying, because those who dead don't have to remember or feel the way the living people do, the people that survived it. So it's difficult to imagine a film better suited for this very day than this one. But I mean, I was just truly floored by this movie that you can watch on Netflix.
Yep, it's on Netflix. Eric, what do you think?
I think this is up there in Lee's best movies. I really do. I mean, you know, watching this movie, you can almost see or even hear Lee kind of smiling and laughing on just offset at the way that he's crafting this thing. As urgent as Steve describes this film, you can also see Lee having some fun with this movie as well. At some point, you'd be easy enough if you were to make a mistake that, Quentin Tarantino made this movie. It's so chock filled with references and homages and things like that. But at the same time, it is, unmistakably a Spike Lee movie. All these flashbacks and things, the history, inserting all these people who have died over the years, fighting for causes and fighting for causes that ultimately, gain them nothing. And it's really this whole great, statement about the Vietnam War and also how things have just not changed, that, people are still fighting for things that is not going to amount to much, in the end. The idea of the Delroy Lindo character actually, turning to the politics that he does in the movie is also, this grander statement about people who have been left behind and, like, what the hell, let's take a chance on this and see if, maybe this is something that, we can finally just look out for ourselves for change, which is, connected to all the gold in the movie. This movie it's funny at times. It is exhausting at times. Delroy Lindo, someone would have to point me to a time when he did not give a good performance or an urgent performance, even in throwaway roles. This is a performance of a lifetime for him. And it's just going to be watching him get the recognition he's getting for this movie is so long overdue. And it feels like it's like kind of Steve kind of referenced that it has been like kind of put in a bottle all this time. And Lee just unleashed it all in this movie. This is definitely one of the best movies I've seen this year.
There's no question about it. It's a great movie. It is absolutely great. And Spike is on a roll right now.
Yeah.
I think this is one of Spike's best movies. And everybody in it is amazing. But God, Delroy Lindo. Oh my God, what a performance. I mean, seriously, like jaw dropping. This movie runs over 2.5 hours. It doesn't feel like it. It covers every possible emotion. We talk about how great Delroy Lindo is, but everybody is great in this movie. Like, all the performances are terrific. It is, it's funny at times. It's heartbreaking at times. It's nerve wracking. I think it's one of the best movies of the year. And I think it's one of Spike's best movies. And again, I just want to emphasize how great Spike Lee is doing right now. Like the last few movies that he's made are unbelievable, and this ranks as one of the best movies he's ever done, with a remarkable cast, and they're all good. It's a Spike Lee movie through and through. Like, you never would doubt who directed this movie while you're watching it. But it's on a whole nother level. I just think it's amazing. It's on Netflix now. Prepare yourself, because it's a pretty heavy experience to watch, although it's not completely depressing or anything like that. But this is one that's gonna stay with you. There's no question about it. And it's one of the best movies of the year.
Did any of you catch the Temptations references? Someone pointed this out to me, that the names of the four lead characters are all the original four names of the and then when one of them left, David Ruffin came in, and that's the name of the son.
Right.
Right.
And then Norman is named after Norman Whitfield, who produced all their earliest hits.
Right.
So,
right.
But what I don't know what it has to do with the big the whole movie, but it's still pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. So, yeah, that's The Five Bloods, Spike Lee's latest. Can't recommend it highly enough. It's available on Netflix. Tom, you watched it, right?
I did, yes. I've actually been on a huge Spike Lee kick. I've gone through almost his entire filmography, save for the documentaries they did.
Yeah.
Just to try and prepare myself for this. You know, I really fell in love with Delroy Lindo in Clockers. He's awesome in Clockers.
He's great in everything.
He's amazing. He's incredible. But
he's great in Congo.
Yeah. But I will say, in terms of Spike Lee, I loved him in Clockers, and he's even better in this. I also enjoyed the fact that they did not get younger actors or do any de-aging.
Interesting thing, man.
Yeah, Steve hit the nail on the head. Exactly what Steve said about how can we, you know, what are these memories?
Yeah.
Can we trust them? That's exactly what went through my mind while watching it. And just the idea of these guys, they should appear as themselves in their older age next to the younger Norman, because Norman never got to grow old.
Right.
And I thought that was really important, that we idolize people as their younger selves, but also it's tragic because we're never going to, you would never know what Norman would look like older, because he shall not grow old.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I was as uproarious in my praise for it. I think it's great. I think it's a really, I'm really glad that we got this perspective on Vietnam, because we never get to talk about it. And we think that Vietnam's kind of a closed book in terms of cinema,
because
it's like, okay, we have Apocalypse Now, Platoon, you know,
Deer Hunter,
really, what else needs to be said? This needed to be said. This is the movie that needed to be made.
It's a great movie.
So it's great.
Yeah, it's a great movie. And that's The Five Bloods, which is available on Netflix now. Can't recommend it highly enough. Okay, what do you guys think about AMC? They plan to reopen their theaters in July. Steve, what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm surprised they're waiting that long, because I think at least in Illinois, they're going to be able to, or in a lot of states, actually, they're going to be able to open a lot sooner than that if they want to. But, I mean, it's, you know, I'm sure that's everything. It's a tentative plan. I'm really curious to know. I mean, what's going to be really interesting is that if, like, when they open, because Tenet now has moved its release date back 2 weeks.
And that's the new Christopher Nolan movie.
Christopher Nolan film was supposed to open in the middle of the month, now opening the last Friday of July. If it's entirely possible that at a place like River East that has 21 screens, that all 21 screens could be playing the same movie. And I mean, that's certainly what they're talking about. What's interesting just in terms of Illinois and Chicago is that if things progress the way they are, the rest of Illinois gets to open their movie theaters in less than two weeks. And there's still what originally they had said was it was only going to be a 50-person limit, but I'm now hearing that the governor and his team are going to change that to 50%. But then we're dealing now with the city of Chicago, which has altered rules slightly and delayed things slightly, which I am now hearing will be more like July 1st, which, again, is less than a week after that. That's fine. But I'm hearing, at least right now, they're sticking to that 50-person thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, there might be some theaters that don't open right away, because that isn't going to help them very much. I don't think that's – maybe River East, it would, if they played the same movie on all 50 screens and people, you know, came out. But,
yeah.
But, like, I don't think it's even economically feasible for the Music Box to open if it's a 50-person cap. So, and I know that, the theater owners in Chicago are really pressing the city to consider that 50% thing. Although I think the Music Box would be more like 250 people. It's like a third.
Sure.
But because I don't think they'd, I don't think half, we don't, I think we'd want half. But, there's still so much up in the air and so much being figured out. But, man, like I said, the numbers are so good in Illinois and Chicago right now that hopefully that will happen. But, I mean, honestly, I'm not one of these people. I'm ready to go back. I will be back the day those theaters open if there's something to go see.
Yeah.
So it's something worth going to see. Like I wish I had seen the Spike Lee movie in a big theater.
I think we all wish
good
that.
Lord.
Yeah.
I hope that still makes it in somehow. But
yeah. All right, so Eric, where do you stand on this?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because sort of Steve's kind of reference that there's almost like a per capita kind of thing. I mean, Music Box is a treasure and is a very large auditorium. So 50 people versus 50%, there's a much bigger difference there.
As
we sort of talk to some people who work in theaters and things like that, multiplexes, the idea that what I've been hearing is that, a lot of theaters are going to be open, and I've heard, like a 25% way of opening up these theaters. And, with the exception of like the big movies that open in the first couple of weeks, I've been told that a lot of the multiplexes, 25% is usually what you kind of get on weekdays and weekends, for some of the smaller theaters in those chains. The Elk Grove Cinema, the one that's, very close to my home, they're actually opening, a little bit sooner than July. I think it's the last week of June that they're opening. And like many theaters who are kind of having this sort of come back when movie theaters are open, come back to us, are going to be playing all of these, older movies, classic movies, modern movies. Even, now that Warner Brothers has moved Tenant, they're going to be opening Inception in its place for its 10th anniversary. So I think everyone's kind of like, everyone, there's a lot of bet hedging going on right now. I think Warner Brothers kind of blinked just a couple days ago, and I think that's going to, they're now sort of putting the onus on Disney with Mulan, like, okay, you guys open first and see how you guys
do.
So I think that's kind of what's going on right now, and I don't think that we've seen the last of those changes. I think that you're going to see Disney blink next.
Mulan is blinking next. I have no doubt Mulan is blinking now.
Oh, without question.
Right. Well, we'll see what happens. Guys, thanks so much, okay? Stay safe.
All right.
Okay.
Eric and Steve, we thank you guys. Interesting idea here that AMC is going to reopen their theaters in July. The question is, will people go? Phone lines are open. Would you go? Do you feel safe enough to go back to the theater and see a movie? I got an article here from Variety that says 70% of consumers would rather watch new movies at home. I got that, but I want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Do you feel safe to go back? Are you going to go back? Are you excited to go back to the movies? Obviously, there are going to be restrictions and rules, safe distancing and all that stuff. And I know people are hungry to get back to their normal lives. I know that. So I don't know. 312-981-7200. Will you be going out to the movies when the theaters reopen? I'll talk a little bit about this article from Variety about how 70% of consumers would rather watch new movies at home. But are you ready to get back into the theater? 312-981-7200 is the number. We want to hear from you. All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because he does every Monday morning. Because it's a jokey time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to talk about urban legends as well and much more. So, we'd love to hear from you. Right now, we are talking about, by the way, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. AMC says that they're planning on opening up their theaters. Obviously, there's going to be restrictions and new rules and guidelines and stuff like that. But the question is, are you ready to go back to the movies when those movie theaters open? So, Variety just published a story saying a new consumer survey reveals deepening dread over public venues and some surprising changes in popular taste for weeks now. As COVID-19 restrictions across the country begin to ease, or in some cases, even where they haven't, national and local news outlets have relentlessly reported on a seeming torrent of people streaming into public places. The coverage points to a common sense understanding: spending 2 months sheltering in place with little to no human contact has produced an overpowering need for people to gather together outside of their homes. According to an exclusive new study, however, the media coverage belies a deeper truth. Anxiety over health and safety in public spaces still greatly outweighs the desire to leave home, And that disparity has gotten larger as the pandemic has unfolded. The results from a survey of roughly 1,000 people in mid-May by sports and events analyst firm Performance Research in partnership with Full Circle Research Company point to just how steep a climb the entertainment industry has in front of it to win back public perception that it's safe to attend and spend money on public events again. 70% of consumers would rather watch their new movies at home. People just don't feel safe. The question is, are you ready to go back to the theater? Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right, what's up?
Not so much. I heard they're going to reopen some movie theaters up soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but ours is still closed, and they got, grass growing over the asphalt right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm ready to go to the indoor theaters, yes and no. And, like the matinees, like there's barely nobody there. That's the easiest way to go instead of going through a crowd.
Right. Right. The matinees, I would imagine matinees are going to be more popular now, because there are going to be less people there in the middle of the afternoon. So maybe that's how people are going to consume their movies. It's just a question of what's going to be in the theaters.
Yeah.
That's the big question.
Uh-huh. But we still got our drive. Drive-in theaters still open in my area.
Well, drive-ins are doing great business. They're doing fantastic business right now. You can stay safely in your car, they're showing some classic movies. Like, they're showing old movies that everybody loves. Like, they showed The Burbs and The Big Lebowski at one of the, so they're going with the stuff that people love. That's pretty cool.
They showed Shrek at my drive-in this weekend.
They showed Shrek, huh?
The very first Shrek.
Yeah. All right.
And they're going to do the Garth Brooks live drive-in.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The Garth Brooks thing is going to be simulcast. That's correct. That's right. Mm-hmm. All right. All right, Chris. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, I'll take care.
All right. Looks like people are going to probably maybe go back to the movies. I don't know. Here's Ike on WGN. Hey, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you,
man?
Okay, what I want to add about that whole drive-in thing, it's nice that drive-ins showing those old movies, but what about playing the summer movies that are supposed to come out this summer instead of people waiting till fall? Drive-ins are a summer event. Why wait till fall and just release the movies that are supposed to come out in the summer in the drive-ins? The drive-ins are booming right now, so why not? It doesn't make any sense. I understand it's a safety precaution, too, but the drive-ins are booming than the movie theaters. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's up to the studios. Like, you know what I mean? It's their decision to what they're going to release and what they're not going to release. So, I don't know. I mean, they pushed back the Christopher Nolan movie. It's still coming out in the summer, but they just pushed it back a couple of weeks.
That's just an option they should do, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, all right, Ike, thanks.
No problem.
Okay. But you excited about getting back to the movies?
That's a tough question. That's a really tough question. I trust that at the end of the day, they do want people to be safe, and the framework for things like assigned seating are already there for, if we're going to talk about, say, AMC, the River East, right down the street from us.
Yep.
You know, AMC is the single largest exhibitor of motion pictures in the entire world.
That's right.
You know, they have a vested interest in people coming and putting their butts in a seat.
Exactly. They're losing a lot of money.
Yeah. Although I am curious about the fact that, what was it, like a week, maybe 2 weeks ago, the news headline was AMC is going, they announced that they might be going bankrupt. And now it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to open in July, though.
It's weird, yeah. I don't know what's going
on. The timing on that is odd, to say the least. But, I think there's a lot of fears about bathrooms. You know, we're not even talking about being in the theater itself. Because that's an intimate area.
Mm-hmm.
Theaters used to be the only way we can consume movies. We now know that that is literally not true in more than just watching stuff that already came out. We can now watch new things, brand new multi-million-dollar movies.
I watched a Spike Lee movie, a brand new Spike Lee movie, from my couch. You know what I mean?
It's just wild. You know, we're in a new frontier. But this whole thing about the digital distribution, I mean, this has been going on for the last 10 years, really. So
yeah, no, that's
this is
true.
This is just a little bit of a nail in the proverbial coffin.
Yeah.
So I mean, if people don't feel safe, if people are not confident, only 70% of people in this poll said that they want
to stay home.
They want to stay home.
Yeah.
So
I think it's going to take a long time for people to feel comfortable in any sort of public environment now.
Right.
Like at restaurants and things like that.
Yeah. Although people are out there.
People really want to get out. That's the thing. It's just that you got to follow the rules.
Yeah, and it's possible. I went myself. I was at a restaurant, sat on a porch. Mm-hmm. Everybody was far away. If you were not sitting down at the table, mask on.
Right.
Outside, and they were like keeping your social bubble. But outside of that, you know, I think we can do this.
Yeah, we can
absolutely do this. It's just.
Follow the rules, man.
Yeah. Movie theaters, when the central premise of your business is a bunch of people sitting right next to each other in a large room,
yeah,
breathing.
Yep.
I don't know what you do with that.
Okay. All right. Let's break. We got the news coming up. Already heard what your body's saying to mine. Hello. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 4. After 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN, for some early morning news with that great crew. And at 5 o'clock, the legendary Bob Surratt is your morning drive host. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are talking about urban legends. It's always a lot of fun to talk about them. What are some of your favorite urban legends? 312-981-7200. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on, because it's a jokey time. And we always play some classic Johnny Carson comedy. And you can watch the Johnny Carson Show every night on Antenna TV, and I highly recommend you do that. The legendary Robert Klein is going to be performing some stand-up for us that we will listen to at 2:30. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. What are some of your favorite urban legends? So this is true. Right, Tom? This whole story out of Idaho?
Yes, sir.
Sounds like an urban legend, but in fact, it's true.
Yeah, it was an urban legend until the legend was proved true.
Oh. If you were only told about it, you might not believe it. Like a story passed around campfires from one generation to the next. But some legends and myths really do have a grain of truth to them. The stories or social media posts are true, at least in this case. Dozens of beavers were really thrown out of an airplane and into Idaho's remote wilderness. Unfortunately, we don't know if they had complimentary snacks on the flight. Wacky. Nearing the end of World War II, people began flocking to the lakeside town of McCall, building family homes, vacation homes, and businesses. Shortly after the war ended, the city found itself with a rodent problem. A colony of beavers, who had been in the area for centuries, began destroying property. So in 1948, the Idaho Department of Fish and Game came up with a unique solution. Relocate the rodents to remote parts of Idaho via airplane. They used a guinea pig, if you will, named Geronimo, for the test drop and several subsequent drops after that into Idaho's backcountry. After several successful tests, it became the mode of operation to move 75 other members of Geronimo's Big Beaver Brotherhood. So why move all the beavers at all? The Idaho Department of Fish and Game said the parachuting program was to actually raise the beaver population in the Gem State while also helping preserve Idaho's habitat. So the beavers dropped it like it's hot to survive. The entire project was filmed, called Fur for the Future, but was lost over 50 years ago. It wasn't rediscovered in 2015 and released to the public. That's out there? You could actually watch beavers jumping out of planes with parachutes on? I would like to see that. Okay, so that's a real thing. People thought it was an urban legend, but in fact, it's real. Beavers were flying out of planes with parachutes on so that they could be safely relocated. Is there footage out there, Tom?
Yeah. Yeah, there is. From the Oregonian, I believe is how you say that.
Uh-huh.
But it's like one of those, you know, classic kind of 1950s era documentaries. This is just bizarre.
So it's actual beavers.
Yeah.
Skydiving out of a plane.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're in like little cages. They don't just attach
them. Oh!
You don't have many.
I just thought they had the shoulder straps on.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, my God. No, it's a, there they are. They put them in boxes, put them into the plane, and they drop them out with the parachutes on, just, you know.
So do they have to pull a ripcord?
I'm not sure.
I mean, if the beavers have to pull ripcords? I don't know. Oh, is this the sound of a...
Yeah, they... They're kind of explaining what they do, but...
Do they seem to be enjoying it? Do the beavers
not
seem
tags are attached for future information.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, so they put the little tags in them. They put
into the drop box. Nearly ready for that flight back into the mountains.
Well, he's being a little rough with the beaver.
No, that's going to end up on the show Friday, by the way.
That's fine.
The drop crates are loaded into the airplane.
Uh-huh. Well, that sounds like the generic 50s voiceover dude, right?
Next, he's going to tell you to hide underneath the
bed. Attached to cargo lines, and the boxes are stacked in rows along the waist of the plane. 10 boxes to a load, 20 beaver ready for the flight to Mountain Meadows.
This is totally bizarre.
I'm surprised this isn't sponsored by Chesterfields.
Totally bizarre.
Yeah, they seem to be, they've got a little bit of video. They seem to be auto-deploying parachutes.
Yeah, so there's no ripcord. You don't have to worry about the beaver doesn't have to worry about pulling his own ripcord.
Yeah, he's not part of the Golden Knights or anything.
No. This is just weird. Now, is that on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's posted by the Oregonian.
So if people want to see beavers...
He's on his way now. His nose and his instinct tell him where to find the water. There's room here for a new home.
Yeah, it's just a little 15-minute video.
Well, it's out there if you want to see... If you have a desire to see beavers with parachutes jumping out of planes... It's there. So it was, people thought this was an urban legend, but in fact it's true, because some urban legends turn out to be true. And we got a whole bunch of them. What are some of your favorite urban legends? 312-981-7200. These are urban legends. In the article here, these are actually real, right? These are urban legends that are real and are totally true,
or at least have been explained in some way.
Okay. Everyone loves a good urban legend, and yet, in many cases, these word-of-mouth stories are totally false. For example, if you live in the Pacific Northwest, you probably shouldn't hold your breath waiting for Sasquatch. If you're from New Jersey, you likely don't have to worry about the Jersey Devil. But while many urban legends are pure fiction, there are some that are absolutely true. With that in mind, we've rounded up some of the country's most curious myths that can be pinned down to actual factual events. And the tales of the boogeyman in the subterranean cities to the story of a word the dictionary got wrong. So read on and prepare to be astounded by these urban legends that are completely verifiable. After all, even the wildest tales are rumored to have a grain of truth in them, right? All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The phone lines are open. We would love to talk to you. What are some of your favorite urban legends? And here are some classic ones that are actually true. And we're going to jump into that. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Favorite urban legend. Oh, yeah. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We do that every Monday morning. We've got some classic comedy from Johnny Carson. The Johnny Carson Show you can watch every night on Antenna TV, and we're going to play back some classic stand-up from Robert Klein. And much more. 312-981-7200. All right. We are talking about urban legends that are actually true. Do you have any favorites? 312-981-7200. Here's Don on WGN. Hi, Don.
Hi, Nick. I got a story about a beaver. My brother was swimming in a river in Canada.
Uh-huh.
This thing was like 20 feet away from him. It slapped its tail. He said it looked like a bullet and bit him in the bottom of the foot.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but I had a friend. He turned around when he heard this story. He says, I've known that for years. Beaver do bite.
Oh, boy.
But that's what my friend said, so I guess they might bite.
Okay. All
okay,
right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Just watch out for those beavers. They bite. I would expect them to bite.
Well, yeah, that's kind of their MO, right?
Yeah.
They chew logs.
They make build dams.
Build dams, man.
And they eat feet.
You ever seen their teeth?
Yeah.
They're orange.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, beavers are interesting animals, to say the least. I mean, who came up with that?
What, a beaver?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm guessing there was a particularly productive day in the boardroom.
Yeah. It's like the tail? What's going on there?
Well, I mean, think of the platypus. Consider the platypus, Nick.
Very strange animal.
It's a beaver crossed with a duck.
Yeah, a platypus is a weird animal.
It sweats milk. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
It sweats milk.
Well, that's disgusting. And I love milk.
Try some platypus milk.
But not platypus milk.
And it lays eggs, but it has fur like a mammal.
It's just weird.
Who?
Who came up with that? Who came up with the platypus? Who came up with the beaver?
I'd love to have a word with management. Figure out what that's all about, the platypus.
The platypus. Duck-billed platypus. Is that the weirdest animal, you think? A lot of weird animals out there.
I'd say the okapi is kind of weird. You ever seen an okapi?
No.
It's like a giraffe crossed with a zebra. It's like it's a really weird animal. They got one here at one of the zoos? Yeah, Brookfield. I want to say Brookfield has it. Brookfield Zoo has an okapi.
An okapi?
Yeah.
All right.
It's like part giraffe, part zebra, part regular horse.
You know, you're in America.
I'm aware.
Okay.
I'm aware.
We say zebra here.
I'm sure you do. I've heard. I've been told.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird animals. What about, I'm trying to think of what's the one that always stands out for me? Oh, the jackalope.
Those aren't real.
Jackalopes are real.
A hare with,
yeah,
with antlers?
Jackalope.
Come on. You don't really.
It's a jackalope.
It doesn't exist. You can't get a horned bunny.
It's a jackalope. I bet if you Google jackalope, you'll see pictures.
No, I understand what a jackalope is supposed to be, but I believe it's an invention of taxidermy artists.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, I see it.
You see the jackalope?
Yeah. The jackalope is a mythical animal.
The jackalope was at my first wedding.
You had a jackalope?
No, we had pictures of jackalopes, all the groomsmen.
Where? Just on you?
We had it. They were little pictures.
You had little pictures of jackalopes.
Yeah.
Any particular reason why?
Because one of my groomsmen was obsessed with the jackalope.
He's obsessed with the jackalope.
And he brought a bunch of pictures for all of us just to have on us during the ceremony.
For good luck.
Yeah.
You know what they say? Pictures of a jackalope mean a great marriage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That one lasted a couple of years.
You can do worse.
Yeah. And we were married for how long were we married? For 3 years. We were married for 3 years. Yeah. Second marriage, 2 years. But I was with her for 7. So.
The jackalope.
The jackalope. I don't know. I don't know why my friend was obsessed with the jackalope, but he became the animal of the wedding. At the reception, we all had like jackalopes on the table with us. Pictures of jackalopes. A bunch of goofballs. But it's a mythical character. It's a mythical animal, the jackalope. I wish the jackalope were real. All right. We've got some urban legends here. And what are some of your favorites? But some, these are real, like the jackalope.
Stop. You stop that. These people turn to us for news and information.
That's right. All about jackalopes.
Your Jackalope News Network.
That's exactly right. Okay, you ready for the first urban legend that's actually true? The story of Charlie No Face. Have you heard this one? I guess it's a guy named Charlie with no face. The tale of Charlie No Face is an example of one of those true stories that gets wildly twisted in each retelling. That's another thing, is every time you tell a story, it gets changed. You know? Here are the facts. In the early 1900s, a Pennsylvania boy named Ray Robinson was electrocuted by a trolley wire, resulting in lifelong disfigurement. Specifically, most of his facial features had melted away. Oh, my God. After that, he was ostracized, and stories about him, about his disfigurement, grew more and more preposterous as the rumor mill began to spin. Today, the people of Western Pennsylvania insist that Charlie No Face, whose nickname remains a mystery, has become a radioactive, glowing green man-type figure who haunts an abandoned freight tunnel. But the truth is, he was just a guy who experienced an unfortunate childhood accident. See, now that's a, you know what I mean? You're going to build that up. Like, that's a story that's really going to get twisted and built up over the years. You know what I mean? Especially with a name like Charlie No Face.
Man, I feel bad for that guy.
Well, yeah, it's terrible.
It's terrible. But hey, it's true.
Yeah, real dude, Charlie No Face. That's a really unfortunate nickname. You know? How about Colonel Buck's recurring tombstone stain? Passers-by are often keen to point out the oddly shaped mark resembling a leg that stains the tomb of this former justice of the peace. That's because rumor has it that Colonel Jonathan Buck ordered a young woman to be put to death for practicing witchcraft. Allegedly, her leg rolled out of the fiery blaze, and in retaliation, the witch put an eternal curse on Buck's final resting place in Bucksport, Maine. While we can't confirm any of that, of course, the tombstone has reportedly been scrubbed through thoroughly several times, but the leg-shaped stain continues to appear. And today, it's become somewhat of a tourist attraction. Colonel Buck's recurring tombstone stain of his leg, of a leg. That's pretty cool. Some of these urban legends are cool, man. How about reptiles living in city sewers? It just depends on what century you're talking about here. In the early 1900s, it wasn't unheard of for wealthy New Yorkers to bring baby Florida alligators back to the Big Apple to keep as pets. When they decided their pets weren't quite as cute as they had hoped, they supposedly flushed them down the toilet. In 1932, the New York Times reported that a group of teenagers had witnessed a gator easing itself out of the Bronx River. But don't fret, the chances that there's a band of toothy reptiles currently swimming through the sewer, through the sewage of your city these days is nil. That's always been, you know, you've seen the movie Alligator, right? Which is a great movie. Directed by the fabulously underrated Lewis Teague, who also directed Cujo. But yeah, Alligator's awesome. Starring the late, great Robert Forrester. And the idea, this is it. You know, the whole idea. Kid flushes a little baby alligator down. down the toilet, and it turns into a giant, insane alligator in the sewer, busting up through the manhole covers and terrorizing New York. That's a great urban legend. That is a great, great urban legend. That one survived for many, many years. The old alligator flush down the toilet turns into a giant alligator and kills everybody.
Everybody knows alligators live in the sewer.
Yeah.
But it's an urban, I don't know. I know it says it's real, but I believe it's an urban legend, like spiders and toaster ovens.
What?
Nothing.
Like the jackalope?
Yeah, like the jackalope, man.
Jackalope is real. Absolutely real. All right. Okay, we're talking about urban legends. Do you have a favorite? We got urban legends here that are actually real. And the jackalope. If you want to if you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio, WGN. I'm tired of playing on the team. Ooh, it seems I don't get time out anymore. Oh. Yeah. What a change if we set the pace. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN, get some great news and information from them. And then at 5 o'clock, it's the legendary Bob Surratt for your morning drive. We are here 24-7 to keep you informed, to keep you company, and to keep you going. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about urban legends, some of which are true, like the jackalope. here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi, morning.
Hi.
Look, two that we grew up with, Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah.
Those were two fake ones.
The Loch Ness Monster, now Tom, you have experience with how in Scotland how they embrace Nessie.
They love him. They love Ness. Or is it a her? I'm not really sure.
I don't know.
I don't know what. Nessie's fun.
But they sell like all kinds of stuff. I mean, they embrace it, right? They sell all kinds of novelties and stuff.
Well, if you know, if there's one thing I know about the Scots is that they love to make a quick buck.
And you can say that because you are Scottish.
I can. Well, I hope everyone says it because it's true.
Linda, thanks for the call.
All right.
Good old Nessie.
Yeah.
No, so, but do they have like little stores and stuff all set up?
Totally. The thing is, you can't walk into any store, like gift store, without having some sort of reference to Nessie, even if it's at a place that's completely unrelated to Loch Ness or anything.
It's just in Scotland in general.
Yeah. It's, you know, she's the mascot.
Yeah.
As it were. Her and William Wallace. And maybe the Proclaimers. Or the Bay City Rollers.
Bay City Rollers.
Yeah, no, the Bay City Rollers. Yeah. Bay City Rollers and Nessie. Those are the two mascots of Scotland.
God, I'll tell you something, man. In the mid-70s, you could not get away from the Bay City Rollers. Saturday. Night.
They were like a bad habit, you know? They just follow you everywhere.
Fantastic clothes, hair. It's fantastic. It's just so mid-70s. Like, if you go back and look at pictures of the Bay City Rollers, you have no doubt what year it was.
It's very... I think they might be an urban legend. I don't believe they actually
exist.
They were
huge, man.
Yeah.
They were huge for about 10 minutes.
That's true.
I think they had about a year, year and a half. But, I mean, they were massive during that time period.
Sure. Sure. But yeah, Nessie is a big no, unfortunately. I'm pretty sure Nessie definitively does not exist.
What was the movie where I think it was Amazon Women on the Moon? You're not familiar with Amazon Women on the Moon?
I am not.
It's like Kentucky Fried Movie. It's a
Oh, okay. It's one of those.
It's like a sketch anthology comedy. So, in fact, John Landis was one of the directors on it. Joe Dante did a couple of episodes. One of them is the legend that, you got to see this. It's movie's hilarious, by the way. They said that the Loch Ness Monster was Jack the Ripper. So they got him dressed up in like a suit with a hat.
Yeah.
Walking through the streets of London. Here's Beth on WGN. Hi, Beth. Beth?
You guys have to stop putting me on hold and then making me laugh.
Uh-huh. All right, Beth.
Okay.
Beth, get yourself together.
I'm composing. Hang on. Okay. So I moved to Iowa from suburban Chicago. And I tried to get along, but, you know, it's the Mississippi River, and they build bridges there, I guess, you know, to get from one place. There was a legend that the iron workers would get eaten by some kind of weird catfish called a gar, way deep down on the bottom of the river.
Uh-huh.
No, like, if an iron worker would fall, he's gone. He's fish food.
He's fish food. Okay. All right. I've never heard that one.
Wait. This is why when I lived there, I swear to God, because I was in journalism, I read the paper, everything. It was the number one unsolved murder capital of the world.
Wow. Okay, so that's what they traced it back to? Was this urban legend?
Well, yeah, blame it on the fish.
Okay. All right, Beth, thanks. Blame it on the fish. Or the jackalope. All right, how about this? More urban legends that are actually true. Are you ready for this one?
Mm.
Have you heard this one before? Neil Armstrong bungling the moon landing speech?
Bungling?
You've never heard this one?
No. What's that all about?
That pivotal moment for all humanity when Americans became the first people to step on the moon. Yeah, well, of course it was scripted, but that quotation that we all know and love is not what Neil Armstrong was supposed to radio back to Earth. We all know the phrase as one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, but he was meant to say one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. Apparently, after listening to the recording of himself, Armstrong admitted to misspeaking the line.
That is strange.
For a man, for he was supposed a man. To say. Yeah.
I think it sounds better the way he said it.
I agree. Well, I mean, we can't unhear it.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's only one of the most amazing quotes in the history of mankind.
Yeah. Oh, wow. For a man.
So you know how they talk about if you want to be nitpicky about movie lines that you forget, that you bungle?
Sure.
Like, everybody thinks it's we're going to need a bigger boat.
You're going to need a bigger boat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think even Casablanca has that. I don't think he ever says, here's...
Play it against Sam?
Or play it against Sam.
No, yeah. He doesn't.
He doesn't say that one.
Nope.
He does say, here's looking at you, kid.
Yes, he does.
Okay. Does say, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Well, I mean, that's one of the greatest lines in movie history. But he never says, play it against Sam.
You know who wrote that?
Who wrote what?
Casablanca.
I can't remember who.
Theo Epstein's grandfather.
What?
Mm-hmm. Theo Epstein from the Cubs.
The Cubs?
Yeah, his grandfather.
His grandfather wrote Casablanca?
Mm-hmm.
What? What? Did he write anything else? I mean, he didn't have to. You know, if you write Casablanca, you're pretty much done.
Yeah. Epstein's grandfather, Philip G. Epstein, and great uncle, Julius J. Epstein, with Howard E. Cook, won Academy Awards for the screenplay of Casablanca.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I know Michael Curtiz directed it.
And if you watch some press conferences, you'll see that Theo often references it.
Is that right?
Yeah. But
how did I not know this?
He never... Well, because they're such famous quotes.
Yeah.
That it's just like, okay, he's referencing Casablanca. But nobody ever thought about why.
Nobody ever thought about why.
Yeah. It's because Philip G. Epstein, along with his great uncle and Howard E. Cook, wrote Casablanca.
That's crazy. That's crazy. All right. Some more urban legends that are actually true. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The government stealing dead children for science. This is kind of true. Oh, my God. In the flurry of testing after World War II, after the U.S. had dropped the world's first atomic bomb, scientists wanted to determine the effect of nuclear radiation on human flesh. In a series of tests known as Project Sunshine, The test subjects were deceased children, specifically stillborn babies, whose parents were probably not notified about how their children's bodies were being experimented on. It's gruesome and sad, but it is true. Oh, my God. That's just nuts. Stealing dead children for science and experimenting on them. Wow. How about this? A corpse rotting a hotel's water supply. You know how sometimes the water at your hotel just tastes downright disgusting? Well, it's not entirely outside of the realm of the reason that there might be a dead body floating in the water supply, contributing to the less than desirable taste. At least that's what happened at a Los Angeles hotel in 2013. After several days of guests complaining about the terrible smell that emanated anytime they turned on their shower, not to mention the terrible taste when they had to brush their teeth. Management checked the water tank on the hotel roof and found the body of 21-year-old Eliza Lamb floating inside. Her body was estimated to have been in the tank for 2 weeks. These stories are a little bit more gruesome than I thought they were going to be. God. That's just weird. All right. Murderers entering apartments via medicine cabinets. Now, this is true. This is true. And this is in Chicago. 1992 horror film Candyman includes a scene in which the main characters learn that a murderer might be entering apartments via the medicine cabinets. And apparently, it was a legitimate structural flaw in some apartment complexes. The medicine cabinets in adjoining apartments in Chicago were connected by a flimsy partition. And an actual murder was committed by criminals entering through this weak structure. Yeah, that's a true story. That's absolutely true. And I believe it did happen in Cabrini Green. And it could have been other apartment complexes as well. But no, that's true. That really did happen. People climbing through medicine chests to get into apartments. That's scary. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you have some urban legends that you like that get passed on all over the place. And the ones that we're talking about here are actually real. We got a bunch more here. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio and WGN. All right. Hello. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock, as we are every weekday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday, and that's what we do on Monday. Jokey, jokey, jokey time. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We are talking about urban legends that are actually true. We've got some people on the line. If you want to jump in, what are some of your favorite urban legends? And we'll get back to some of these true ones, too. Here's Elizabeth on WGN. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Good morning. At Brookfield Zoo, it was thought that pandas were very sweet, docile creatures, and we had two of them. One was Su Lin and the other was Mei Ling.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a big attraction. And Dr. Ralph Graham, who was head of the zoo at the time, ordered a temperature to be taken of one of them because he thought one of them was ill. And so the keeper went in and tried to take the temperature, and now he has a lifetime job, but a hook for a hand.
Ah, yes. I remember that story.
Yeah. And you know that Brookfield Zoo was the first to breed okapis in captivity?
I didn't know that.
Yes. They were just discovered in the 1920s.
Wow. Okay. Didn't know that. Thanks, Elizabeth.
You're welcome. All right, take care.
Good night. Yeah, pandas, man. They'll kill you.
They are bears.
I know. You know, just because they're cute.
Yeah. That's what I don't get is that, you know, they get, folks get a little bit too caught up and like, oh, they're not
adorable.
Bears. They're pandas.
They're adorable, but they're bears.
They're bears. If there is
they're
one
wild
type,
animals.
If there's one type of panda that I would
Express?
Get close to. Yeah. yeah. Give me a little bit of that Chow Mang.
I like Panda Express.
It's not bad. It's all right.
I like it.
You could do better than pandas.
Well, yeah, but you know, like if
you're in the food court
when I was yeah when
and
I
between
when
that
I,
and a Sbarro's
when I worked on Saturdays at GN, I would sometimes go to the Nordstrom you know, across the street.
Oh, yeah, pop over there.
They've got a great food court there. And
Panda Express.
And I opted for Panda Express quite a bit.
Hey, that's fine, man. That orange chicken is off the
hizzy. Delicious. But anyway, pandas.
Pandas. Red pandas. You ever seen a red panda?
I don't think so.
They're kind of like little raccoons, but they're very, super cute.
Do they look like pandas?
In the sense that they've got like the dark circles around their eyes.
Yeah.
They look like a little miniature panda, but they're the size of a cat.
That's weird.
Yeah. And they're more cat-like. They're, like I said, they're
Are they more
like,
docile than the big regular pandas?
They appear to be. They appear to be. I mean, again, as you said, wild animals.
Yeah.
Wild animals are wild animals. They're going to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
But
I like watching cuter. I like watching pandas like roll down hills and stuff.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's fun stuff.
They're adorable. I like them to eat. I like to watch them eat.
Yeah, they're
the
adorable.
Bamboo.
They're adorable until they maul your hand
Well,
off.
Yeah. I mean, they're still wild animals, but that doesn't mean they're not adorable. Pandas are adorable. They'll kill you, but they're adorable.
Like the jackalope.
Like the jackalope, which exists. They get along quite good with pandas. I don't know if you know that or not. The jackalopes.
Natural friends.
How about this? A mysterious watcher haunting a family's new home. Right after a family purchased their dream home in New Jersey in 2014, a stalker calling himself The Watcher barraged them with a series of letters claiming, among other things, that his own family has watched the house for generations. The letters also inquired about when the family would be filling the house with young blood. While it's unclear if there's any truth to what was substantiated in the letters, it was enough to scare the parents and their three children out of moving into the house. These are scary stories, man.
Yeah, they're spooky.
Do you know the story about Virginia Madsen and Sideways? If you, Virginia Madsen was at Flashback just this last year, and she came on stage when I was interviewing Rich Coase for his 40th anniversary. And she told a story about how they were filming Sideways, and a dude who was not happy that they were on the property went up, climbed a tree, and had a crossbow. And I was like, are you kidding me? So there was a dude in a tree objecting to the fact that they were on the property, and he had a crossbow. So Virginia Madsen and the cast and everybody, they had to be accompanied whenever they left the trailer to go on location because they were worried that this guy with the crossbow was going to shoot him. I had never heard that story before. When Virginia was on stage with us, me and Sven, and she told that story, because that's one of my favorite movies of all time, Sideways. It is truly one of my favorite movies ever. And I had no idea. It's a crazy story. Dude, crossbow, upset that they're shooting Sideways there. But she said nothing ever happened. You know, you could hear him. She said you could hear him like yelling, like at night. That's terrifying.
You could hear the sound of the crossbow.
You could hear this guy yelling and like laughing in a tree, armed with a crossbow, while they're filming one of the most beautiful romantic comedies of all time. Yeah, she said she had to be accompanied whenever she went from the trailer or anything. They had to have security. Scary stuff. Here's Daniel on Danielle. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
All right. What's up?
I was gonna say, like, I realize now that I have so many different theater ghost stories.
Uh-huh.
All because I'm theater. I was talking about North Central and Pfeiffer Hall. But I also realize now about the, like, Cutting Hall in Palatine. Do you know Cutting Hall, the theater?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Do you know, like, the ghost stories behind Cutting Hall or not really?
No, I don't. I just know that there are a lot of ghost stories attached with theaters. Like, that's
no,
a thing.
No, like, insane amounts. Like,
yeah.
I remember Cutting Hall, like, they would tell me the stories. I never really believed them. I guess in the 50s, there was, like, some 16-year-old girl that ran up the stairs, fell backwards and died. Then you have like the Cutting Hall, who's named after, you know, and they see him all the time. Like one time they saw him help out a wall, like something about Palestine High School, where like there was this dude, supposedly, like someone took a picture and there was a man that looked like Charles Cutting helping out, and they never found out who it was.
Uh-oh.
And what's weird is all these things I've actually like witnessed myself. Like one time the lights went out, and it, like, there was no reason for the lights to have gone out. You know what I mean? Like, there's absolutely no reason, but it did. And it used to terrify us. Like, now, honestly, I don't care.
Yeah.
But, like, when I was a kid, that was terrifying. All these stories about the older kids would tell us.
Oh, sure.
You know, about, like, the ghosts and stuff. And then in the North Central one is a little more scary. Because they have, like, multiple ghosts. With, like, Cutting Hall, it's a little less malevolent, you know?
Yeah.
But the ones at North Central College are absolutely terrifying. Like, it's kind of like that Conjuring, not the Conjuring, one of those movies where it's like the good, like the mom becomes haunted.
Yeah.
That's the Conjuring.
Yeah, the Conjuring. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the Conjuring. Yeah.
It's basically like that, where there's like a yellow boots was a janitor there who always wore yellow boots. And he basically ended up ending his life in what, like the utility closet.
Jeez.
But this is what, like, but that theater is terrifying. Like, Cutting Hall is, like, you know, Palatine, and it's not that scary.
Yeah.
But there's something very scary about the Naperville North Central, like, ghost there. It used to be, like, a priest house or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it became eventually a theater. I don't know, there's so many stories with theaters and ghosts it makes you not want to do theater anymore.
Yeah. No. There are a lot of urban legends and scary stuff associated with theater. That goes with it. That's why there are so many there's superstitions in the world of theater.
Oh my God, yes, I really am. And I used to not be. Like, I used to be the kid who only watched like Barney and Sesame Street and Disney Channel, and now all I watch is like ghost stories all day.
Right.
People claiming to be witches.
Yeah. No. There's plenty of that stuff available on TV. That's for sure. That's for sure.
It's true.
All right, Danielle.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Yep. Bye, Nick.
Take care. We've talked about how crazy the superstitions are in the world of theater. It's just nuts. How about this one? The boogeyman kidnapping children. Parents often reassure their children that the boogeyman doesn't exist, but on Staten Island in the 1980s, he was all too real. Cropsey, C-R-O-P-S-E-Y, Cropsey would drag children from their beds carrying a bloody axe in the crook of his arm. In reality, the legend surrounding Cropsey can likely be traced back to a man by the name of Andre Rond. Rond worked as a janitor at Willowbrook State School, which specialized in providing services for children with disabilities. He was later suspected of kidnapping multiple children and officially found guilty for kidnapping two. So that's a real... How about the city beneath the city? Now, we've talked about this before. Because
cities hidden underneath other cities.
Yeah. You talked about what, Scotland?
Yeah, Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, that's right. Though the conspiracy theories about the subterranean city beneath Denver International Airport have been thoroughly debunked, other American cities, like Las Vegas, does have its own underground city. But it's less of a conspiracy and more of an effort on the part of the tourist industry to maintain the city's appeal. With police's stringent limitations preventing homeless people from setting up camp on the Vegas Strip, that population struggled to find anywhere to go and ended up in the city's underground flood channels. Ooh. Pretty creepy. All right. Okay, we got more urban legends that actually are true. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline studio here above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here until 4 o'clock, as we are every weekday morning. At 4 o'clock, we go over to the Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN, get some news and information from those great folks. And then the great Bob Surratt has your morning drive at 5. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday, and that's what we do. We hear some jokes. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Classic Johnny Carson. You can watch the Johnny Carson show every night on Antenna TV. And at 2:30 every morning, we play a little comedy from the Classic Johnny Carson show. And this morning at 2:30, we are going to hear Robert Klein, who is truly one of the most legendary stand-up comedians of all time. So right now, though, we are talking about urban legends that are actually true. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. So how about this one? The house at the bottom of the lake, resting in the murky depths of Connecticut's Gardner Lake, is a fully intact house. That much is confirmed by the Hartford Courant. Supposedly, the house sank beneath the surface when a family attempted to move it across the frozen lake in the midst of the 19th century winter. The eerie part is that to this day, fishermen report hearing strained musical notes gurgling up from the surface of the lake, supposedly from the parlor room piano. Ooh. Ooh. How about an entire town at the bottom of a lake? It's no Atlantis, but it's probably as close as America is going to get to the underwater city of myth. In the 1940s, an entire evacuated town in Georgia was purposely flooded with water in order to build what is now known as Lake Lanier. The entire community, including a racetrack, was submerged by the lake building project. So there's a whole town. Can you go down there and play the ponies?
Yeah, seahorses.
Yeah. Bet on the seahorses. How about this? Medical students recognizing a cadaver. Apparently, a letter to the editor of the Journal of the American Medical Association in 1982 documented how a medical school student had recently recognized her own great aunt among the cadavers being dissected in one of their classes. Luckily, this situation doesn't seem to happen very frequently. Well, that's terrifying. How about the woman in black haunting the South? This situation isn't as quite horror movie scary as the name implies. In 2014, a woman dressed in black from head to toe, including a trailing black veil and billowing black robes, was spotted walking the highways of the South. And a series of rumors mounted that what could she be up to? The truth was that the woman, a U.S. Army veteran, described the self-imposed pilgrimage as having to do with her faith and religion. Okay. Here's Big Ed on WGN. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Nick.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a urban legend which became true that there's a city in a mountain in West Virginia. It's under a place called, there's a resort there called Greenbrier, which is like a high-class resort.
Uh-huh.
But this place was built for Congress, in case there was a nuclear attack. That's where they were supposed to all go to.
Okay.
And once it became known and, you know, people knew about it, they were in checking it out. I was telling Tom, they found cases and cases of booze in there.
Mm.
Got to keep that Congress lubricated, Nick.
I guess so.
Hey, Nick, can I say something about your dad?
Sure.
You remember that joke he told about the three-legged chicken?
Yes.
I was going through YouTube, and I was looking at, like, the best of Ronald Reagan. He told that exact same joke at his first State of the Union address.
The three-legged chicken started, joke?
This exact same joke, Nick. When I heard, I said, this is my dad's joke. What's going on here?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he told that same joke.
It's a good joke.
It's a good joke.
It's a real good joke. All right, thanks, Ed.
Bye.
All right. The joke, by the way, is this guy's driving down the... Do you know this joke?
I don't think so, no.
This guy's driving down the road. He's doing about 60. And all of a sudden, next to him, there's a chicken, a three-legged chicken, running, keeping up with the car. So this guy's like, wow, that's pretty fast. And it's got three legs. So he speeds up just to test the chicken. So now he's doing 75. Boom, chicken right with him. Speeds up as well. Three-legged chicken running right next to the car. So he says, all right, screw it. He starts going 90. So now he's going 90 down the street, down the road. Chicken keeping up with him. Three-legged chicken running right next to the car. Finally, the chicken runs off, goes into a farm, and runs to the farm. So the guy drives into the farm, and he says, he gets up there, and the farmer's out there, and he goes, you know you got a three-legged chicken? He's like, yeah, I raised three-legged chickens. He goes, you raised three-legged chickens? He goes, yeah. He goes, really? How do they taste? He says, I don't know. I haven't caught one yet.
Oh, geez.
That's a great joke.
Yeah. And I'll have to tell you about, I think it's, have you ever heard of, I think it's Max the Headless Chicken?
No, but I'm curious. Let's take a break.
Yeah.
And then you can tell me about Max the Headless Chicken? Is this a real thing?
100%.
Okay, we're talking about urban legends that actually are real. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. Lots of weird stuff out there in the world. All right. Hey, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're talking about urban legends that are actually true. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. At 2:30, we always play back some classic comedy from Johnny Carson. Robert Klein is what we're going to be hearing this morning. Legendary. So you had an urban legend you wanted to tell me about, or a character, yeah, or person, or a, what is it, a chicken?
Yeah, Mike. I said Max, but Mike the Headless Chicken.
Mike the Headless Chicken.
Also known as Miracle Mike.
Well, sure, if he's got no head. Mike the Headless Chicken, also known as Miracle Mike. What's the story behind this?
So Mike the Headless Chicken was a chicken that lived for 18 months after his head had been cut off.
What?
Yeah, although the story was thought by many to be a hoax, the bird's owner took him to the University of Utah in Salt Lake City to establish the facts. Mike the Headless Chicken. On September 10th, 1945, farmer Lloyd Olson of Fruta, Colorado, was planning to eat supper with his mother-in-law and was sent out to the yard to by his wife to bring back a chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Olson chose a 5.5-month-old Wyandotte chicken named Mike. The axe removed the bulk of the head but missed the jugular vein, leaving one ear and most of the brain stem intact. Due to Olson's failed attempt to behead Mike, the chicken was still able to balance on a perch and walk clumsily. He attempted to preen, peck for food, and crow, though with limited success. His crowing consisted of a gurgling sound he made in his throat.
Oh.
When Mike did not die, Olson instead decided to care for the bird. He fed it a mixture of milk and water via an eyedropper and gave it small grains of corn and worms.
And how long did it live?
Lived for, it said 18 months.
18 months after his head was cut off.
After his head was cut off. So he was hatched on April 20th, 1945, and finally died March 17th, 1947. He began a career of touring in sideshows company of such other creatures as a two-headed baby, and was also photographed for dozens of magazines and papers and was featured in Time and Life magazines. He was put on display to the public for the admission cost of just 25 cents.
25 cents to see a headless chicken.
Yeah.
Named Mike.
At the height of his popularity, the chicken's owner earned $4,500 a month. That'd be roughly about $50,000 today.
$50,000
a month. And Mike himself was valued at 10 grand.
Wow. Mike the Headless Chicken. Is there pictures of this thing?
Yep. You can see pictures of Mike the Headless Chicken. And it's exactly what it sounds like.
I got to look this up.
Here's a little bit more information. Mike the Headless Chicken is now an institution in Fruta, Colorado, with an annual Mike the Headless Chicken Day, the third weekend of May, starting in 1999. Events held include the 5K Run Like a Headless Chicken Race, Egg Toss, Pin the Head on the Chicken Cluck Off, and Chicken Bingo, in which chicken droppings on a numbered grid choose the numbers. Mike the Headless Chicken was an inspiration for the poultry-themed comedy punk band, the Radioactive Chickenheads, serving as the subject of their 2008 song, Headless Mike.
Well, I'm looking at it. There it is. It's got no head. It's very strange. Very, very strange.
Like I said, long thought to be a hoax.
I'm looking at pictures of it.
We'll have to give them a call next year for Mike the Headless Chicken Day.
When is it?
It's the third weekend of May.
Third weekend of May.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll have to get that.
We just missed it.
Damn.
Yeah, Mike the Headless Chicken. Crazy Colorado events and traditions is part of the that. You can celebrate Mike the Headless Chicken. It's weird, I'll tell you that. But I'm looking at one picture with the eyedropper, trying to take care of Mike the Headless Chicken.
Yeah, here's how he died, actually. In March of 1947, at a motel in Phoenix, on stopover while traveling back from tour, Mike started choking in the middle of the night. He had managed to get a kernel of corn in his throat. The Olsons had inadvertently left their feeding and cleaning syringes at the sideshow the day before, and they were unable to save Mike. Olson claimed that he had sold the bird off, resulting in stories of Mike still storing with the company. Touring with the company as late as 1949. Other sources say the chicken's severed trachea could not properly take in enough air to be able to breathe, and therefore it choked to death in the motel.
Oh, poor Mike.
So, under strange, you know, circumstances, but seems to be fitting for a bird of his stature.
Mike the Headless Chicken. it's very odd looking, I will say that. It's a chicken with no head. That's essentially what it is. Wow. Here's a question. Why would you name a chicken that you're going to kill?
Well, I mean, you got to raise them.
Yeah, but you're going to kill it and eat it. Do you really want to name it? I'm going to go out and kill Mike. We're going to eat Mike tonight.
You know, my grandmother's best friend when she was a girl was a cow.
What?
She had to, it was named and everything. And she had to shoot that cow.
Why?
To eat it. She had to shoot the cow.
But she was friends with the cow?
Yeah, it was like her best friend was this cow.
So she had to kill it?
I believe so, yeah.
Come on, man.
That's life on the farm, Nick.
Yeah, my mom grew up on a farm.
Yeah. She probably... I've
never asked her if she's ever named the animals that were going to be killed.
I'm going to put $5 on that she probably did. At least one.
Yeah, I'll ask her. I'll ask her later. Yeah, I just find it weird. You know, I mean, I understand the circle of life and everything we got to eat, and I'm not a vegetarian by any stretch of the imagination. So I understand. I just think it's a little weird that you would name it. That's all. I don't know. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I don't know. You ever name anything that you were going to eat? More urban legends that are actually true. How about this one? The man who became a pair of shoes. George Parrott, also known as Big Nose George, was hanged in the 1880s for being a raucous outlaw with a penchant for horse thievery. Supposedly, a physician was assigned to study George's brain in order to root out the cause of his criminal activity. And bizarrely, he decided to use George's skin for a number of crude purposes, including making himself a new pair of shoes. Today, those shoes are on display at the Carbon County Museum in Montana. Guy made a pair of shoes out of a dude's skin. There's just something wrong with this world. Let's see. Here's Rich on WGN. Hey, Rich.
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
All right. I got an interesting thing. This is the next best thing to someone who had like a pet gigantic great white shark. Guy didn't have a pet great white shark, but he had a pet full size, three times the size of a man, crocodile in I think Brazil. And he had this crocodile all its life, and he became friends with it, and he would play with it in rivers, and this crocodile would grab him, and they'd roll around, he'd ride it on its back, and this crocodile would let him pet it, and the guy ended up kind of becoming a a showbiz, like a sideshow kind of thing. He made money.
Yeah.
Like, seeing people, and I've seen footage of this. In fact, the National Geographic did a documentary on it. That's how I know of it. So it's a real deal, and it's never before been recorded or since, but this is like a man-eating, ferocious-looking crocodile.
Wow.
That was, like, total friends with this guy.
Wow. Well, yeah. There you go, man. At least you'd be you know, you can feel protected if you're friends with
his name's Pocho, if you ever wanted to look up Pocho, P-O-C-H-O.
P-O-C-H-O. Okay.
Yeah, you can find footage of this on YouTube.
Very cool. All right, Rich, thanks.
Take care.
You bet. Bye-bye. Giant crocodile as your pet. Weird pets, man. I've never had a weird pet. Never had a weird pet. Just a few dogs, cats. That's about it. No weird pets. But I know a lot of people who do have weird pets. We used to hang out, my family friends, my friends of ours, they had piranha. They had piranhas. This family had a bunch of piranhas. They were scary.
Well, they are piranhas.
Yeah. But I used to be fascinated by them. They're really, really scary, though. They had piranhas and two German shepherds, one of whom bit me.
Of the German shepherds or the piranhas?
No, the German shepherd.
Because with the piranhas, you're just asking for it.
Bit me on Thanksgiving.
Did he confuse you for the turkey?
He got a chunk of my side.
Oh, did he get like an actual bite out of you?
Oh,
or just...
oh yeah. I got a scar, man.
Oh.
This was a dog that I knew.
Yeah.
And I jumped up on the table. It was Thanksgiving, and I was standing by the dining room table in our friend's dining room.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the dining room table would be.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the wishbone, because it was like they had the carcass of the turkey up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard, arr. The dog's name was Duchess, German Shepherd. And she went at me, and I jumped up on the table, got my side and my ankle.
Because you went for the wishbone.
I didn't go for anything. I was just standing there. Yeah, I was just standing there. This was Thanksgiving. Now, the insane thing is, this was the 70s, okay?
Okay.
The woman who owned the dog as part of the family was a nurse, so she just sewed me up. No rabies shot, no doctor, just got sewn up by a nurse who had been drinking Yago Sangria all night.
Did she put any of that... that orange stuff on you?
No. She did not put Mercurochrome on.
That's a
she
mistake.
Did put
a,
she did put an ointment on.
Okay. And, but no Mercurochrome?
No.
How does she call herself a nurse?
And as a result of this, because I got bit by a dog on Thanksgiving, my parents were like, we'll take you to a movie as a little treat so that you can forget that you just got mauled by a dog. So we went to go see Heroes with Henry Winkler and Sally Field.
Yeah, a real treat.
I'll never forget that. I'll never forget it. My parents were like, okay, we'll take you to see a movie. And at the time, the Fonz was insanely popular. This was the 70s. So they took me to see Heroes after I got bit by a dog. Very memorable Thanksgiving.
Named Duchess.
Named Duchess, that's right. So, all right, let's take a break here. Comedy from Robert Klein from the classic... Johnny Carson series. That's coming up right here on 720 WGN. Yeah. Hello. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're going to get back to our conversation about urban legends that are actually true. So much fun. Some of these are weird. But also, we're going to talk about KFC apologizing to a man who was refused the drive-thru service for being on a horse. Plus, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. It's Monday morning, 312-981-7200. Every morning at this time, around 2:30, we like to play back some classic Johnny Carson. I love Johnny Carson. You can watch the Johnny Carson Show every night on Antenna TV. I highly recommend that you do. And we like to play a little comedy from that every morning at 2:30, whether it be a sketch or some interview or some stand-up comedy, as is the case here. One of the most legendary stand-up comedians of all time. In fact, Tom, first comedian to ever have an HBO special. And this was years ago. This was in the 70s.
Did he play the harmonica in that too?
He did. No, I don't think. Does he play the harmonica here?
Yeah, he does a little harmonica here. We get a good amount of harmonica.
Yeah, no, he's known for that. I've seen Robert Klein a couple times live. He's unbelievable. And he played harmonica when I've seen him. So Robert Klein, legendary stand-up comedian. Do we know what year this is from?
Yeah, this is from 1977.
Ooh, okay, we're going back. Okay, so from 1977, classic Johnny Carson clip. We like to make you laugh here every morning at 2:30. Here's Robert Klein.
Shah of Iran, speaking of the Shah of Iran, well, Henny Youngman's technique worked so well for him that I thought that maybe it could be updated with a blues. Shah of Iran was making the rounds, there's no question. He did the McNeil Lira Report, he did the Today Show, he's doing a Merv, a Dinah. He's doing a Hollywood Squares. He's doing a Joker is Wild. He's doing... I'm happy to be here tonight because it's a Thursday night, and anyone on this show can tell you that Thursday night, the best people come. Now, these guys are here every night, Thursday night. For some reason, the hippest, baddest people. I have nothing against last. You see the Wednesday night people last night? The Thursday night people. Why did Anne Blythe do a Twinkies commercial a few years ago? I could never figure that out. I couldn't think of a more inappropriate commercial for her. Twinkies. I'm sure she serves them to all her friends in Beverly Hills. Have a Twinkie, Mildred. They're so good, you know. You suck your tonsils down to your toenails with that thing. There's nothing more lonely than a ventriloquist without his dummy. It looks so silly. Hey, fella, how are you? You know, and they just pull up and down and there's absolutely nothing there. I, on the contrary, have life insurance, the most depressing. You're absolutely right, Orson, the most depressing. It's a form of gambling, isn't it, life insurance? I'll bet you $20 a month you die that you don't die. Now, they used to use euphemisms for the word death. They never used to say death. It used to be things like, what if you're not there, young man? You know, a very subtle thing with a guy pushing his little girl, insurance is love. Insurance is giving. Daddy, I want to go to medical school when I grow up. Does that cost money? No, honey. Insurance is everything. Daddy, I want a big wedding. Is that expensive? No, honey. You know, it'll make you crazy. And then they kill you in a cinematic way. What if you're not there, young man? Like an X in front of your head. Or they break a mirror or a freeze frame or no one pushing your daughter suddenly, you know. What if you're not there, young man? One thing, I won't give a damn. How's that? Be dead. One of the only advantages of the big D, a second after it happens, I don't care. Before, you'll feel like a heel. I'm sorry I didn't buy life insurance. I left you with a lousy store that loses money. I don't care. And the I don't care is so much longer than the other part. Now, no more metaphors, no more euphemisms, rather. Now they say, the one you brought up there, yes, I'm delivering pizza and I have a PhD, but I didn't think that dad would die. How's that? That's during the commercial of a football game. That's entertainment for you. I suggest going to the bathroom every time there's a timeout in the football. They really get anywhere. It was a day just like this when Bill and I bought this cabin. We planned a future, we planned a thing. We didn't plan that Bill would die. Nothing's really changed. I'm a hooker in New Orleans now. My children work for a Middle Eastern potentate as pornographic models. But nothing really has changed because we didn't get life insurance. A slight sledgehammer approach, you know. Didn't think that Bill... Now, the one you mentioned with the house that blew down, that lady is so stoic. She's so lovely. It happened in Kansas or something, and, well, our house blew down, and Allstate came very quickly. In fact, they were there 3 days before the hurricane. They had another house in the backyard waiting to put it in, you know. At least I'm not a hooker in New Orleans, you know. She just sees the best part of everything, and... Now, the football metaphor is one of the big insurance companies, naturally, during football games, and they have this thing where they're on your team. They got a bunch of football ex-players that are models now. Come on, Herbie needs financial security! This little twerp with spectacles there, hiring a ball. Get financial security for Herbie! And they block out financial woes. It's a very simplistic approach there. There's a financial woe. Kick it. It's a financial woe. You know, block out financial woes. And the guy's wife is screaming from the stands with her veins bursting, Herbie, get financial security! I don't want to be a hooker in New Orleans, Herbie! He makes the guy just about makes a touchdown. Now they have a woman, too. She got financial security, you know. In real life, they'll let you get tackled. Yet. Break your fibula like Fran did. My face is pink, my eyes are blue, my behind is purple, my fingers pink. Try tuning your set now, chump. You know, it's my German ambulance. This is the, I was at Gettysburg College recently and felt so historical and this is the night before the battle Civil War movie with the guy playing the harmonica around the campfire. It's a horse. Where are you from, boy? Virginia, sir. That's not a horse. It's just a guy going, but there's a difference. It's like... Ever been in a battle before, boy?
No, sir, but I'm aiming to. Boy? Yes, sir. You better stop playing that damn harmonica.
Oh, man. Funny guy, man. Robert Klein.
Bizarre guy. Very bizarre.
Yeah, no, his stuff was out there. His stuff was out there. There's no question about it. So, boy, he's been doing it for a long time. He's been in the business a long, long time.
The first HBO special.
The very first HBO special. Yeah, it was Robert Klein.
Good pick. Good pick for them.
Yeah. He killed every time he was on Carson, too. He did a couple of guest fill-ins, too, as a host. As a guest host. He has, I don't know if he has the record for most HBO specials. I know he had the very first one. But he's got to be up there. If he doesn't have the most HBO specials, he's got to be near the top of that list. So, all right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to get back to some urban legends that are actually true. Here's Leslie on WGN. Go ahead, Leslie.
Hey, Nick. This is Leslie from Ohio.
Right.
Many years ago, I took a course at The Ohio State University on urban legends.
Okay.
And we really went into depth with a lot of them, but a lot of them were steeped in either fear or, you know, teaching a lesson of some kind,
right.
You know, scaring you.
Right.
And one example of that was during the 50s, a lot of girls wore these big hairdos called beehive.
Right, of course.
And, well, I guess the thing about them, though, was they couldn't wash them. I mean, because it was expensive to put them up like that and
right.
the whole bit.
Right.
And so the urban legend developed that someone had a nest of spiders
right.
in their hair.
I remember this. Whole, I totally remember it.
And it's totally urban legend. I mean, it's done to instill, you know, fear of
right.
you know, keeping clean and
right.
so on.
Right.
So,
just but I do remember that. I do remember that. Okay, thanks, Leslie.
Bye.
All right. Yeah, my mom had a beehive. She stacked up on top. That was a very very popular hairdo. The old beehive. We're talking late 60s, early 70s, around that time. Yeah, but that I do remember that. And also the urban legend, since we're talking about urban legends, you remember the classic one about bubble yum?
Oh, yeah, spider eggs.
Made with spider eggs.
Or that if you swallow gum, it lives for
8-7 years.
7 years
you won't be able to digest it.
Yeah, or if you swallow, I used to believe that if you swallowed watermelon seeds...
A watermelon would grow?
Yeah, watermelon would grow in your stomach. And I think I don't eat watermelon. I don't. And I think it's honestly because of
you know they're seedless watermelon.
I'm aware of that. But the fear is too great.
Watermelon is delicious, man.
I like watermelon flavored things.
Yeah, but watermelon itself, the actual fruit, is really delicious.
Not for me.
Man. You like cantaloupe?
No, I'm not a big melon
guy. You're not a melon
guy? I'm not into melons.
No honeydew? None of that stuff?
No.
Oh, man.
Couldn't pay me.
My favorite of all of them is cantaloupe. Cantaloupe is absolutely my favorite.
Yeah.
I could eat an entire cantaloupe in one sitting.
It's quite a melon.
It's delicious.
Couldn't pay me.
Got to scoop out all the seeds, though.
Otherwise, out of the middle. In your tummy.
Scoop out those seeds. Boom.
Last thing you need is a cantaloupe growing in your stomach.
Yeah. Because you know that's true.
Just like the jackalope.
The jackalope is real. Jackalopes, by the way, enjoy cantaloupe. Because it rhymes with their name.
Yeah. Well, haven't you? You've had the jackalope cantaloupe?
Yeah. That's a brand name.
Jackalope cantaloupes.
Yeah. You can get it at the Jewels. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline studio here on a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke a little bit later on. Because it's a jokey time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about urban legends that are actually true. How about this one? Halloween candy being laced with drugs. It's recommended that parents exercise some caution and check their children's candy after an evening of trick-or-treating. And for good reason. There have been, unfortunately, multiple reports of unsuspecting children returning home with small baggies of crystal methamphetamine in their treat bags. Good God. How about the old...
The razor blades in the apple?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember getting told about that, and I always thought it was, you know, bullpucky.
It is. Which Halloween movie was it? I think it was Halloween 3?
Sure, yeah.
Season of the Witch? Halloween 3, Season of the Witch?
Yeah, it would have been.
No. Maybe it was Halloween 2. But anyway, they had it's Halloween 2 because Halloween 2 takes place in a hospital. And so there's a kid in an emergency room, and they cut to a shot of him with a razor blade stuck in his mouth. So, how about this? An over-the-counter medicine being laced with poison. No, this is true. This is absolutely true. The Tylenol scare from the early 80s. I worked at Juul at that time. Ever wondered if the medicine you dutifully take as prescribed includes any extra ingredients? Thanks to the modern-day tamper-resistant seal, you can rest assured that your medicine is mixed just like the doctor ordered. Unfortunately, this packaging was developed for a reason. I totally remember this. So the tamper-resistant seal, the whole, you know, safety issue, that came about because of the Tylenol thing. In 1982... someone got it into their head to inject potassium cyanide, a deadly poison, into multiple bottles of Tylenol. After several people died in what became known as the Tylenol murders, the Federal Drug Administration stepped up to the plate and came out with regulations requiring all medicinal manufacturers to produce seals that were tamper-proof. I worked at Juul during the Tylenol scare. We had to take all the Tylenol off the shelf and dump it.
Because it was a guy, I feel like more pills back then were in the capsules, right?
Yeah.
That they take apart.
They had both. Yeah, they had both types.
Both tablets and capsules.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still to this day don't trust capsules unless it's prescribed to me by a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've had to take, you know, over the years, antibiotics tend to come in capsules.
The vitamin I take every morning.
Yeah.
Is in capsule form.
Your Centrum Silver?
It is. Yeah, it's Centrum. I don't know if it's silver. It might be, because I'm old.
No, I don't think you're quite there yet. I think you're just on regular Centrum.
I can't remember. I mean,
you on the Centrum Silver.
I take a vitamin every morning. I take a vitamin and what's for your gut?
Probiotic.
Yes, probiotic.
Oh, that's good for you.
Yeah. Along with my blood pressure pills.
Get all your vitamins?
Because I have high blood pressure.
Ah.
So that's what I take every morning when I get home.
There you go.
Vitamin, antibiotic, or no, not an antibiotic. Why am I blanking on the probiotic?
Probiotic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the opposite of the antibiotic.
Yeah.
I just take melatonin. I take some melatonin tablets.
So you can go to sleep?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've never tried that. My dad swears by it.
It can help. It does. It's not like taking Tylenol PM. That stuff's gonna knock you out. You won't be awake for the next 2 days. But melatonin, because your body naturally produces it
right
when you're trying to go to sleep, if you give yourself a little, and they're like 5 milligram tablets, it's like not a whole lot.
Yeah,
take a couple of those, and you just
Sleep well.
It could help.
I just don't sleep well.
It might be able to help. It might not. Might do nothing. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor, but I am a jackalope enthusiast.
That's right. How about Coca-Cola recalled a suggestive poster? Yes, the soda company everyone knows and loves has experienced its fair share of public relation problems. The poster in question was benign enough, at least in the company's intention. Issued in the 1980s as a way to promote the new bottle design, the poster bearing the slogan "Feel the Curves" was quickly recalled after a keen-eyed observer noted an inappropriate sexual image in one of the ice cubes. What? We have to look that up. Feel the Curves. Coca-Cola, Feel the Curves. Now, I know there's some people still talk about subliminal advertising.
Yeah.
I think I vaguely remember this. Have you found anything?
Yeah.
What does it look like?
I nothing I can say on the air.
Oh.
It's an act that I cannot describe.
Okay.
But it is.
Oh, boy. All right. Yeah, right? I'm looking at it right
yeah,
now.
So for all the kids out there.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Oh, man.
So they definitely, someone got fired at the Coca-Cola company that day. I'll tell you that much.
I don't remember that at all.
Apparently, they had the same problem at Disney.
What do you mean?
They had guys who were making the posters sneaking things.
Oh, sure. Sure, the
Little Mermaid.
The Little Mermaid, I remember that.
Yeah, I know it was on the cover of the VHS tape.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that. I remember the sneaking in the phallic symbol.
Yeah, the phallic symbol.
On the Little Mermaid poster.
That we can say.
Yeah. Wow, that's really weird.
Do the guys really have nothing better to do, you know?
Yeah, I don't think so. All right. Let's take a break, and we've got more urban legends that are actually real. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to talk about some drive-thru incidents that you've had right here on WGN. Right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline studio here till 4. And then we head over to Bradley Place on the TV side of WGN and get some morning news from that great crew. And then at 5 o'clock for your morning drive, it's the great Bob Surratt. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are going to be talking about, yesterday was Flag Day, so we're going to be talking about some of the ugliest flags that are out there. We'll be doing that in a little bit. But we're wrapping up the conversation here about urban legends that are actually true. Did you know this one, Tom? Webster's Dictionary made an error.
Really?
From 1934 through 1947, Merriam-Webster inadvertently included an entry for a fabricated word, doored. D-O-R-D.
Doored?
Defined as density. The error was eventually corrected by a flustered editor who termed it a ghost word. It's nice to know that one of the most authoritative sources on the English language also makes mistakes. Doored.
See, I would have thought it would have been, you know, D-O-O-R-E-D. Verb. As in, to be doored. What happened to that guy's face?
He got doored. Well, you got to watch out when you're getting out of the car, man, for bike riders.
I got doored.
I doored a guy.
You doored a guy?
I did. I doored a guy. I was getting out of a cab.
That's why, what do they call it when you, you know, they tell you to do it now when you're unbuckling or buckling your seatbelt, you like...
Look behind you.
Yeah, they have a word for it, though, like a phrase.
It was ridiculous because I was in a real hurry. I was going to see a play.
Oh, God. Was he okay?
He was okay. He was hurt.
He was banged up, but...
I mean, he got doored and he flipped over.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. It hurts. It hurts a lot. Helmet?
Yeah, he did have
it. Okay, thank God. Okay.
But yeah, I was going to the Athenaeum Theater right on Lincoln Avenue, and I was in a hurry because I was going to see a friend of mine's play, and I was running late. So I didn't even look. I just opened the door. I felt horrible. Like, really, really horrible. I ended up not going to the play, obviously.
Yeah.
But the guy, you know, I mean, he didn't sue or anything like that, you know.
Well, I find that if people are genuinely apologizing and as long as nothing serious is wrong, if you get away with just a few bruises and bumps.
It's horrible.
You know?
I felt so bad. Seriously, I felt so bad.
Mm. It's not a good feeling once you flip over those handlebars.
I felt horrible. I felt horrible. And of course, back then, first thing I did was I went to the bar and got drunk. Because I just got cut. I was so upset. I was like, I got to go. So I went to Simon's and got loaded. But it's if you've ever been doored, and you have, I have not. I don't ride a bike. But I can't tell you the amount of guilt I felt over this guy.
Well, you know, at least he was wearing a helmet and, you know.
Yeah, he was. It still wasn't pleasant at all.
I can't imagine. Cannot imagine.
So. How about the jet black squirrels of the Midwest? Urban legends that exist. You've seen black squirrels, right?
Oh, yeah, I've seen them.
They're beautiful.
I find them a little scary.
I think they're cool.
I think most squirrels are kind of scary. Not scary, but like I don't trust them. They're a little
Well, I guess I don't trust them either. You know? These squirrels, possible possession of arcane powers, akin to black cats in Halloween, remain a source of contention, but the existence of these rare jet black woodland creatures is irrefutable. These black squirrels are confined to the Midwest, concentrated in particularly large clusters in Michigan. The story goes that Kellogg's cereal guru, W.K. Kellogg, imported black squirrels in an effort to eradicate red squirrels, a species that he detested. This Kellogg guy was nuts. He really was a little crazy. So he hated red squirrels and he wanted them gone. But black squirrels do exist. How about injury-inducing escalators? Injury-inducing escalators. So maybe it's not exactly possible for your shoelace to get caught in the escalator and suck you completely underneath the machine. Admit it, you did have that fear as a kid, but escalators are more dangerous than you'd expect. A study published in the journal West Gem in 2013 reported that the U.S. experiences approximately 10,000 emergency level escalator related injuries a year. 10,000! Unsurprisingly, alcohol usually plays a large role in these accidents. So if you've had a few, consider opting for the nearest elevator instead. All right, here's Larry on WGN. Hi, Larry.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Hey.
Hey, so you're talking about them squirrels. A buddy of mine lives in Crestwood. He's got two of these big, big oak trees in his yard. He's got white, all white squirrels, six of them living in two different nests in his trees back there.
Really? All white?
All white. I took pictures. I didn't believe it. He was like, yeah, they've been here for years.
Wow. I've never seen an all-white squirrel, Larry.
Yep. He lives right on her 35th, just west of Cicero Avenue.
All right.
We were sitting out there drinking beers one afternoon, and I spotted him. He just started laughing. He goes, you never seen white squirrels, huh?
I've never seen a white squirrel. Tom, have you ever seen a white squirrel?
Never seen a white squirrel.
I've seen the black ones. I've seen the black squirrels, and then the regular sort of brownish, whatever regular squirrels
are. Yeah, they're all white. They're albino squirrels.
That's pretty cool.
Do they have, like, pink eyes?
I didn't get close enough.
They're
rats with tails.
Yeah, well, my friend calls pigeons rats with wings.
Same with the sky rats, the seagulls.
The sky rats, the seagulls, yeah, of course. Okay, thanks, Larry.
All right.
The majestic white squirrel.
He mentioned seagulls. It always gets really crazy at Wrigley, like late in a game. Like if they go till like 4:30, you know? You've seen games where there's like seagulls everywhere in the outfield.
Oh, yeah. No, they're basically fighting them.
Yeah.
They're basically out there fighting off the seagulls. It's crazy.
It's nuts. It's really nuts. So, all right, let's take a quick break. We'll wrap this up. Urban legends that are actually true. And then I think we're going to jump into ugly flags right here on 720 WGN. All right. Hello. Nick DiCiglio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline studio. It's a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we are going to talk about some of the ugliest flags on the planet. But we're talking about some urban legends that are totally true. And the topic of squirrels was brought up, these black squirrels. And here's Gene on WGN. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Nick. Nice to hear you all the time. You were talking about squirrels and the fact that this one guy hated red squirrels. It made me wonder why, because they can act very erratically. When I lived in my house, I used to feed the squirrels in the backyard, but I fed them corn cobs. And one time, and there's a senior building close by, and people from that building are constantly feeding the squirrels nuts. So nuts have a lot of copper in them, and even with humans, if you don't metabolize copper, you could conceivably be redhead. The biochemist who was looking into biochemistry of people kind of felt that redheads may have copper toxicity, but he died before he could research that, and the next biochemist had told me that story. So with redhead, it's very possible that people who aren't metabolizing the copper out of their food could be diagnosed with mental illness when it's actually an imbalance in the ability to metabolize copper out of your food. So there was, and when I would go in the backyard and feed the squirrels, there was one red squirrel that was acting very erratically. And I kind of felt like that squirrel's liver wasn't able to handle the copper, apparently, and I kind of felt that might be why it was red.
Hmm.
And there was a guy in Oak Park many years ago, a young guy was walking around with a squirrel on his shoulder, so obviously some squirrels can be, you know, pets in this case. But I thought that was kind of interesting, too, what you were hearing about squirrels and how you could be afraid of them. And that's probably why. Those who are erratically behaving are probably having health problems.
Yeah, you know? That's probably true. That's probably true. Interesting stuff. Okay, Gene, thanks.
You're very welcome.
Okay. 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
Get this. Apparently, there's a couple listeners astutely pointed out that there's a place in Illinois that's like the home of the white squirrel.
There is.
Only Illinois. Only. O-L-N-E-Y.
That's the name of the town?
Yeah. In southern Illinois. It's in Richland County. And it's literally, like, you go to their website, you know, Only Illinois. Their symbol is a squirrel, and it's called the home of the white squirrel.
Wow.
And then there's a white squirrel right there on the front page. So
if you want to see some white squirrels, you got to go to Only?
Only.
Only.
Yeah, Only. O-L-N-E-Y.
Okay.
If you're into that sort of
if
thing.
If you're into the white squirrel thing. I've never seen a white squirrel.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No. No. I'm going to have to look online, I guess. So, we have some more urban legends here. How about the man who created a balloon-flying lawn chair? This is a true story. While the balloon-buoyed flying lawn chair is a common trope in cartoons, it has roots in reality, too. The first person to create a flying lawn chair was Larry Walters, who made a homemade airship using the lawn chair and 45 helium-filled weather balloons. He set out with this homemade flying vehicle on July 2nd, 1982, out of San Pedro, California, and flew through the skies for a whole 45 minutes before becoming entangled in power lines and climbing down to safety, according to the New Yorker. Since his semi-successful flight, numerous imitators have surfaced attempting to recreate this historic moment, and they've all had the same amount of non-success. What about that old guy from Up? He did a whole house. a prop corpse turned out to be a real dead body. Ugh. Though it may read like an urban legend, the corpse of Elmer McCurdy, an early 20th century bank and train robber, somehow became a frightening staple of the traveling carnival and sideshow circuit for more than five decades. That was until his mummified remains, then used as a frightful prop, were discovered in 1976 at the Pike Museum or Amusement Zone in Long Beach, California, now dubbed the Bandit Who Wouldn't Give Up. McCurdy's remains were finally sent to their final resting place in 1977 at the Summit View Cemetery in Guthrie, Oklahoma. Wow. What? That's creepy. How about the case of the accidental adult film star? How does that happen? If you were ever a resident of Council Grove, Kansas, it's likely that you're familiar with an urban legend that details the accidental exploits of a town sheriff who made a pre-internet era viral erotic tape. As it turns out, the legend actually checks out. As reported by ABC News, the sheriff of Council Grove, Kansas, accidentally returned a VHS tape containing intimate footage of him and his wife to the local video store. Oh, no. After the slip-up was made, numerous people around town soon learned that the most intimate details of this sheriff's life. Oh, man. How about the body under the hotel bed? Legend has it that some people encounter dead bodies underneath their hotel beds. Though it sounds like a childhood campfire story, in fact, a dozen-plus newspapers have detailed stories about this grisly occurrence. Ugh. From a couple in Atlantic City sleeping on a mattress that contained a dead body, to guests at the Budget Motel in Memphis finding the dead body of Sony Millbrook, a missing person just beneath their bed. That's just terrifying. How about the Maine Hermit? For 27 years straight, citizens and tourists at the North Pond region of Maine would come home to mysteriously find possessions, food, clothing, tools, toiletries missing. An urban legend was born. There was a hermit in the woods. Then in 2013, legend became fact when one man, Christopher Knight, I'm assuming not the guy from Brady Bunch, was arrested and booked on robbery charges. According to GQ, he committed more than 36 robberies per year. As for how investigators tied him to 3 decades of crime, when Knight was asked how long he'd been living in the woods, he paused and retorted that by asking when the Chernobyl meltdown occurred, and the answer was 1986. There are aliens buried in the Southwest, despite the tall tales of that are perpetually swirling around Nevada's Area 51. The only extraterrestrial presence in the Southwest can positively confirm that the mass burial ground for the 1982 E.T. video game, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, the video game, which was based on the seminal 1982 film of the same name, was met with such widespread adaptation that Atari decided to literally bury all of the unsold games in a New Mexico landfill. Yeah, people hated that game. They hated the E.T. game. Are those still... Has anybody got one of those?
Oh, man.
It's like an old E.T. game?
For the Atari? Yeah. Buried in the desert.
Buried in the desert. All of them. The remaining games. They were like, okay, Atari was like, okay, that's it. Let's just distance ourselves from this and bury all these things.
Arguably almost killed the then young video game industry. Because there was a huge crash. There was a huge crash. And the only thing that brought it back was the Nintendo Entertainment System in 1985.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, the madman who hangs dead bunnies from bridges. Oh, man.
What is wrong with people?
Even if you weren't a resident of Virginia in the 1970s, when this urban legend became a famous tale among children and teens, it's likely that you're at least familiar with some aspects of the story. As the legend goes, an escaped mental institution patient had taken to roaming around the countryside of Virginia, killing rabbits and hanging their dead bodies from bridges in the area. Man, these are really creepy urban legends, aren't they?
That's how urban legends go, man.
And though the exact story may not fully check out, there are real reports, very real reports, about a raving madman in the area who was seen by numerous people in October 1970. According to the witnesses, he was dressed in a white suit and bunny ears, sometimes even launching a hatchet at cars full of people. What? With bunny ears on? All right. Urban legends, man. There's a reason why they freak people out. Those are some freaky, freaky urban legends, man. Okay, yesterday was Flag Day. We talked a little bit about it. We told you about the history of the American flag and paid tribute to it. But now we're going to go into the ugliest flags on the planet. 312-981-7200. In your opinion, what are the ugliest flags on the planet? So I'll describe them to you, and we've got great descriptions here. It's a fun article, and this was in bestlifeonline.com, bestlifeonline.com. Some of these flags truly are really ugly. Tom, you've seen some of these, right?
Yeah. We get to look at one of them in many of our buildings around here.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hi, we're live in the Skyline studio here until 4. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. We start off our work week with a laugh from my dad. That'll be coming up in just a little bit. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. So we're talking about the ugliest flags on the planet. So this one out of Tampa, Florida, and it's really ugly. In 1930, the city of Tampa adopted its first flag based on a mock-up, not by a graphic designer, but by an accountant. Cue the don't quit your day job jokes. According to the Tampa Bay Times, most Tampinos have no clue why the city has a flag, but those who are aware aren't exactly fans. I was proud to carry it because I'm proud to represent our city, but I'm not proud that this is the flag that represents our city, said one city council member who served as a flag bearer at a recent public event.
Now you know what the next one is, Tom.
Everybody's favorite.
Illinois state flag.
Commonly cited as a bad flag.
It's really weird. It's just really weird.
I mean, you've got an eagle, right, clutching... Is there snakes? Isn't it grabbing a snake or something?
There's a shield.
Yeah.
And here's what it says. The Illinois state flag has all the makings of a great flag, but not just quite right. For instance, why is the eagle severing a banner of the state's motto? Or is he actually regurgitating the state's motto? And why are the years in that order? Wouldn't it make more sense to have 1818, the year that Illinois became a state, on top of 1868, the year that the flag was designed? What's even more confusing is that the good people of Illinois have proven capable of designing a worthy flag. Just look at the Illinois Centennial Commemorative Flag. A blue and white star design and a veritable masterclass in the use of negative space. That wouldn't look out of place in a museum. How this state flag remains is beyond us. Yeah, it's not a good-looking flag. It's always been pretty much dismissed, right?
As a flag, kinda.
Yeah.
But, you know, we haven't changed it at all. I don't think there's really any plans to. It's been, as far as I know, it's been the flag since Illinois was instated as an official state. It was 1818?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at this point, just let it go. Just we're all good. I think that's why so many people really identify with the Chicago flag, which is a great flag.
It's a beautiful flag. The Chicago flag is great.
Clean, simple, a lot of hidden meaning.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You can just enjoy it by looking at it, or if you do the research, you can find out a ton about it. There's so many interesting
things. It's a great flag. It's an
amazing flag.
But the state flag, not
state good. Flag, way too busy, way too complicated. Don't know what's going on.
How about the River G County in Liberia? Oh, this is terrible. This is terrible. If you're a U.S. citizen, you're not allowed to poke fun at the Liberian flag since it's essentially a pared-down version of the American flag with one star rather than 50 and 11 stripes rather than 13. The flags for each of the 15 counties in Liberia, on the other hand, are totally fair game. For starters, each county's flag is just a smaller version of the national one. Can you imagine if every U.S. state had haphazardly affixed an American flag to the upper left-hand corner? The art is a basic departure from what you think as traditional. All bright primary colors and abstract silhouettes. But the old flag of River G County put a twist on the formula by adding a definitive black outlines, and the result looks like something you might find in an elementary school art fair. To credit River G County officials, the flag has since been redesigned. Now county buildings fly something that you simply have to see for yourself. It's just such a weird... This is just a weird flag. There's, like, weird trees in it. On it. It looks like a five-year-old drew it. Did you see this one?
Yeah, it's basically made up.
Three weird trees on a hill with a sun rising, and then in the top left corner there is what looks like an American flag with one star.
It's baffling stuff.
It's ridiculous. Calgary, Alberta. You know, I don't think I've ever seen this before. Have you seen this flag?
It was the first time looking at this article when I found it. It was the first time I had ever seen it.
It's ridiculous. Is this a flag or a pendant for a 1980s era baseball team? Calgary's flag features a white cowboy hat, a beloved symbol of the city which hosts the annual Calgary Stampede and is known for its white hatting ceremonies. And a giant C that kind of looks like a horseshoe. It's off-center and combined with white bands on the top and bottom. It looks more like something that you should see in a vintage sports jersey than flying above a city hall. It does look like a sports logo, doesn't it?
Like, that could be a college team.
I'd never seen that that flag before. It's weird. And I didn't know that Calgary was known for their white hats, their white cowboy hats.
I mean, I'll be honest, I know very little about most of Canada.
Calgary, I just know that they like hockey.
Yeah, they like Flames.
And the Flames are play out of Calgary. I didn't know that there was like a thing for
white cowboy hats.
It just seems strange to me. All right. More ugly flags. All right, how about Cyprus? On an all-white backdrop, an orange silhouette of Cyprus hovers above a pair of olive branches. And those olive branches aren't just decorative. They symbolize peace between Greece and Turkey. Two nations that famously warred over claims to the island, dating all the way back to the Greeks of the 15th century. Cyprus didn't become independent in state until 1960. As a flat image, sure, the design passes muster, but the moment some bright sunlight illuminates the flag, it's less than a symbol of unity and more about a game of squinting, as you can see in the above photo, which they accompany. What is it? Does anybody like the Illinois flag? Do you know anybody who likes it? No?
I don't think so. We don't really think about it much. It doesn't really pop up in a lot of places. Yeah. There's not a ton of people with tattoos of the Illinois flag. American
no.
flag? Sure.
Chicago
flag? Yeah. Sure. I mean, I can't even think of most state flags. I really can't. I want to say one state that I remember having a really nice flag is, I think it's North Carolina.
Okay.
It's one of the Carolinas, and I believe it's North Carolina. And if I'm not mistaken, it's like a palm tree or some sort of, you know, warm weather tree across a navy blue on a navy blue field, and it's got like a crescent moon in it, something like that. And I just remember every time I saw it, I thought it was a really nice flag.
What about our neighbors, like Indiana? What's the Indiana flag look like? The Indiana state flag.
I like the Indiana state flag. So that's, again, all navy blue, and it's got a torch in the middle
mm-hmm.
and a smattering of stars, which I'm sure means something specific.
I'm sure, yeah.
And in a circle around it.
Okay.
It just says Indiana.
What about Michigan?
Michigan.
Is their state flag also pretty cool?
There's a little bit more like us. It's kind of odd. So you've got, it's navy blue, red banner that says, you know, it's the same motto as like the United States, E pluribus unum,
yeah.
Of many one. But then there's a moose and a deer or possibly a caribou. I don't know. And a very crudely drawn bald eagle.
Really?
Yeah, around a crest, and then again another banner at the bottom that has some sort of Latin phrase, as many flags are wont to do.
Uh huh.
Okay. It's not amazing. It's not amazing.
And that's Michigan.
That's Michigan. The Michigan state flag.
You said there's a caribou on it?
Yeah. I'm not great with my antlered animals,
except for the jackalope,
the king of all antlered animals.
That's exactly right.
But I can tell one of those is definitely a moose because of its oddly shaped, you know, kind of snout.
Okay.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go with your music intro.
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
What'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
Yeah! You get to hear that every Monday morning because my dad tells a joke to kick off the work week. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And my dad's been telling jokes here for a while. Hello, Dad.
Morning, Nick.
How are you?
Good.
How's Ma?
She's doing great.
Good, good, good. Okay, this is joke, what, 289, 298?
298, yeah.
You're two away from 300.
Yes, oh my God.
Wow, isn't that amazing?
Yes. Okay.
All right.
So the teacher asked the class to write an essay on an unusual event that happened the past week. Said, my daddy fell in the well last week. Good Lord, the teacher explained. Is he okay? He said he must be, Johnny said. He stopped calling for help Monday.
All right, all right, all right.
Nick! Oh, boy. That's a good one, Dad.
Bye, Nick. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Okay, bye.
All right, see you there. My dad's just told a joke where a guy died.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
He'll do it again next week. Number 299 next week.
Oh, I already told him I'm going to make a certificate.
For the 300th?
For 300.
Okay. 300 jokes.
I'm trying to think. Should 300. We get someone who'd want to be? Maybe I'll get Bert. No, I wonder if Norm McDonald will be there. We could get Norm McDonald.
Norm McDonald to help out with the joke.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a jokester.
He's a total jokester.
Yep. He likes to tell jokes. All right. All right. Let's get back to these ugly flags. Indonesia. The design of Indonesia's flag, horizontal split dual coloring blocking with red on the top and white on the bottom, isn't bad per se. It's just that we've seen this flag, which was adopted in 1945 before, many times, in fact. Look at the flag of Monaco, which was adopted in 1881, or the flag of Tarija, Bolivia, which has no identifiable adoption date, but it is likely ancient. So this is a flag that's not original. It's also not very good looking. Oh, look at this thing. Turkmenistan. Have you seen this one? The individual elements of Turkmenistan's national flag are all lovely. A dark green background representing the Islamic religion. A white crescent with five stars representing the nation's bright future and five senses, respectively. And a deep red column complete with five intricate patterns representing each of the country's five major tribes. It's a well-intentioned design, and it looks fantastic up close. On a flag, though, the detail is a bit too intricate to be fully appreciated. If you view it from afar, it becomes a muddied point to the point that it looks just like a red blur. A lot of elements on this flag. Lots of stuff happening on this one. What does Missouri's flag look like?
Missouri?
Yeah.
I'll be cold and dead in the ground before I recognize Missouri.
It's from Grandpa Simpson on The Simpsons. So, Missouri, can you describe the flag of Missouri?
Sure, Missouri. I mean, this is a nice, clean one. So, it's red, white, and blue in horizontal stripes.
Okay.
So, three horizontal stripes, starting with red, white in the middle, blue at the bottom. They've got a nice circle kind of emblem in the middle.
Uh-huh.
Surrounded by stars. And within that emblem, you've got two bears.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Are they fighting?
They are not. They are peaceful.
Peaceful bears.
They are peacefully holding up a smaller circle with the motto, United we stand, divided we fall.
Mm.
Now, even further within the circle, there are three symbols. One is a blue, it's a quarter of the circle. So imagine a quarter of a circle.
Uh-huh.
And it's blue with a crescent moon, but the crescent is not going sideways like our moon. It's going up and down.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then a second quarter below that, red with a small white bear in there. So that's a third bear.
So now there's three bears. On the, is Missouri known for its bear population?
I could not say. I could not say. And then the other half of this circle appears to be the emblem of the United States, the greater government. So it's the eagle with the arrows in one hand,
right?
All that kind of stuff. So there is some Latin in there, but seeing as I did not take Latin in high school, nor was it offered to me, I could not tell you what it says.
Okay.
But really impressed by the use of bears.
There's bears on a lot of flags.
Yeah.
Bears might be the most popular animal on flags.
That and eagles of some type.
Oh, of course, eagles, yes.
Yeah, that and the eagles of some type.
Yeah.
But I'd say these bears are not nearly as good as, like, the California bear.
Okay.
That's a good bear.
All right.
As far as bears go.
All right, how about the Central African Republic? The flag for this country in the center of Africa looks like it would be perfectly fine flag for complementary colored stripes, dark blue, white, green, and yellow, with a single yellow star in the top left corner balancing the stripe at the bottom. Then there's the vivid red stripe that's right down the center, making it severely overcrowded and an unbalanced piece of graphic design. And then finally, Pocatello, Idaho, which is like, it looks like a bunch of pyramids with a big star over it, and it's also really like foggy. We'd be remiss to talk about the ugliest flags on the planet without mentioning the flag of Pocatello, Idaho. No, that's not their flag above. That's Pocatello's redone flag, which was unveiled in 2017, till a firestorm of press surrounded their old one. After being dubbed the worst city flag in North America in a 2015 TED Talk, Pocatello opened up a call for redesigns. More than 700 entries poured in from all across the country. The result, as you can see for yourself with this winning entry above, is truly stunning. It's proof that the ugliest flag ducklings can blossom into full-fledged banner beauties. So, the new flag for the city? Pretty cool. Pretty cool. I like our city flag, I think, the most. I mean, besides the American flag, which, of course, is, you know, that goes without saying. But I'm a huge fan of the city flag. Yeah. And it's been used in so many different ways, too.
It's a fun one.
It is, and it's incredibly, you know, people love it.
Oh, yeah, they have a deep connection to it.
Ugliest flags on the planet, Tampa, Florida, tops off the list. And this is a really ugly flag. I will say this, though, it does scream Florida. There's kind of no doubt what state that represents. Our good friend Rod Pyle is going to be on later tonight after 11. So we'll have we've got some space stuff to talk about. He's with the editor in chief of Ad Astra magazine. It's always great to have Rod on. We always love talking about the world of space with Rod, and that's what's happening on the show.